How dare you?
Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, we're going to be talking with Pedro Rodriguez, Pennsylvania's field director for the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, talking about, hey, Toomey, keep your hands off of it. And the committee of meeting, how much cutting are they thinking of doing? You know, I was just talking to somebody today. Back in 2005, when Bush was running around with his filing cabinet saying, oh, it's nothing but IOUs, and he was roundly and soundly rejected by the American people for even bringing it up. It's amazing how just a few years later, it's now on the table. It's amazing how the right wing, and how masterfully they've done it, continue to push the message. Now, what needs to happen is folks on the other side need to push back equally as hard. That's why we've asked Pedro. He is the field director, again, for the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. No doubt in the name there. Also in the second hour, Greg Smith, president of PSECU, going to be here talking about the November 5th day when, you know, they want you to pull all your money out of the big, too big to fail banks and move it somewhere else. Not often I bring advertisers on to talk about their products. Not often I endorse things, but PSECU has been my bank for years. They've always treated me well. I can go into story after story where they've cut me slack over doing something dumb like not transferring money from one account to another and a check bounces, and they go, don't worry about it. One of the big too big to fail banks. Never in a million years. So we'll talk to Greg about that. A couple other banking issues that have come up. Also in the second hour, Steve Wymoff, Legislative Director for Citizens for Tax Justice, going to talk a little bit about the flat tax, the Herman Cain 999 or the 909, as we now find out that it actually is with corporate taxes, just kind of, you know, going off as we knew it would. Tomorrow, I guess, the big day, Rick Perry coming out with his flat tax. And Perry picked up a big endorsement today in the flat tax king of the world, Stephen Forbes. So, interesting. Anybody guesses on what Perry's tax plan will be tomorrow? I'm sure we're all waiting with bated breath, and we'll be so surprised when he comes out with the flat tax plan that we know is coming. Also, your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Everybody have a good weekend. I know I did. Went roller skating, took the kids roller skating. I haven't roller skated in probably about 30 years. And now I know why, because I'm no good at it. I was actually into hockey, played hockey for years. Ice skating was my thing, not roller skating. We're taking the kids next week ice skating. Let them fall and see how they like it this time. Also, finally got my bathroom done. So everybody applaud for me. Thank you. Finally got that in the works. It's only been a month now since our disaster. So good, good, good. I hope everyone had a good weekend. Did you have a good weekend, Jake?
Absolutely.
Good, good, good. The occupation continues here in Harrisburg, as across the country and the globe. One of the great things that you've got to be very happy for the folks up in Albany, as the Capitol Police have said, no. Not going to do it. Not going to bash hippies. Not going to kick people to the curb. We're just not going to do it. And what I find interesting, and here in Harrisburg, what's been really nice to see, much like when we were in Wisconsin, that the police were actually, for the most part, on your side. The police were people who were giving you support. Here in Harrisburg, the cops drive by, and quite frequently they beep the horn or they'll wave in support. And what I think I've come up with, the areas that are struggling, like Youngstown, Ohio, or here in Harrisburg or other areas that where there's some struggle going on, the police identify. Because understand, the police, no matter what you think of them, they're part of what they think of themselves, they're part of the 99% as well. So, you know, coming out and bashing hippies, you know, may be fun for them. It's not getting them anywhere down the road, because understand, Wall Street took their pension money too. So when I see the police saying, no, we're not kicking hippies in the street. We shouldn't have the resources to do it. You know, these people aren't causing any trouble, according to one state official. So, you know, why get into it? And the one state official said the bottom line is the police, no policing, not the governor and not the mayor. So the police are going, you know what, they're not breaking any laws. They're peaceable. Leave them alone. And had they done that in New York, had they just left them alone, chances are this thing would not have exploded the way it has. And we have seen across the country occupies all over. And now you're seeing average, everyday people coming out and being part of this. It's no longer the frame. And good luck trying to frame it as just a bunch of dirty hippies who want to have sex. And again, nobody sent me. I'm waiting for the videos. No videos. And you would think with all the video cameras out there, all the cell phones, all that stuff, but there's nothing. But what you are seeing is you're seeing people coming out of the woodwork. Nurses in Chicago coming out to support them, firefighters, pilots in New York. You're seeing people of all stripes coming out because they get it. They get the frustration and the anger, and they get that, you know, this is a conversation that has to be had. This isn't an agenda that's been predetermined like the Tea Party. This is not something that's already been hoed. This is not a path already beaten. But this is a conversation, and I read this Patriot article, and I don't know if you saw it. It was titled "Ill-Conceived Impressions Divide the Tea Party Movement and Occupy Wall Street Movement." And they talk about this Katie Abram, who, understand, is a paid shill. And she goes in and says, well, you know, hey, you know, they're frustrated like we were, but we had an agenda, and we knew what was going on. You know, they don't know, and they're all over the place, and they don't know what they're doing, and we did. And the first thing I thought of, and help me here if you think I'm wrong, but the Tea Party had 30 years of Limbaugh telling them what to think. The Tea Party had years and years of right-wing blathering to point them in the direction that they went. They weren't Magellan. They weren't discovering new territories. This was all stuff that had been laid out for them. So when all this 9/12 stuff and all the Tea Party groups, this was already pre-laid out. There wasn't a lot of thinking that went into this. You already bought the ideology. It was just now, and you got to give the people who put that together the utmost credit for knowing how to do it and how to manipulate and how to push and how to steer and direct, but they were already on board from the beginning. The people I meet at these Occupies, most of the time, they're not political. They're frustrated. They're angry. And you could easily make the assumption that, well, you know, they have their ideology, and a lot of them do. But for most of them, it's, you know, I'm finding my voice. And, you know, I read this Abrams quotes in the paper, and I'm just going, you know, can you be any more disingenuous? She goes on to say, well, we knew we wanted limited government, and we're tired of bailouts. Yeah, because that's what the right-wing talking heads, the right-wing megaphones were spewing to you. That's it. So when they're trying to compare them, say, oh, you know, there are parts that are there, the frustration part. But where are they different? Because there's some who think that the Tea Party and Occupy movements are going to come together at some point, or have to for the good of the country, and it's not going to happen. Because they're two very different world views. The Tea Party's all about, we don't want any government. The heck with the government. And most of the people that I've met, you know, they're a handful of Ron Paul types. But for the most part, people want government. They want their government to do more for them. Less for corporate America, less for the corporate people, less for the billionaire class, more for them. More programs to help them. And I was talking about this with my wife over the weekend. And I grew up in a really crummy neighborhood. But you know what? The swimming pool was open, and it was free. Granted, there was glass in it often, but it was still open, and it was free. There were tennis courts and basketball courts, and there were all these things for kids to do. There were all of these avenues of recreation. The parks were there that you could, you know, walk a couple of miles to. But there were things for people to do, for families to do, where you're not always reaching in your pocket. Conservative world wants you to constantly be reaching in your pocket. Every time you leave the house, reach in the pocket, start paying people. And why is that? Well, because they've redistributed the wealth from you and me to the very, very wealthy. You know, when we were making good, solid livings, we were paying taxes. And we were funding the things that we wanted. As soon as you started funneling that money upward, they go, oh, screw those parks. Let's figure out how to make money out of this, which is why the Corbett administration had talked about limiting, doing some sales of our parks. Their privatization team, not the what or when or if, but how we're going to privatize everything. They want to privatize the parks because it's an asset. And I love the frame that somehow the Tea Party was a grassroots movement. And I'm sorry, I just don't buy that. I just don't buy it. You had big mega donors. And they're trying to say that the Occupy movement has mega donors. And I'm asking, who are those donors? Who are the people that fund this this movement? Because if they did, how many people remember the big Tea Party buses? Remember those, the Tea Party Express, those couple $100,000 buses with the beautiful sticker jobs on the side with the big flags and all the real patriotic stuff that just spontaneously happened? Couple hundred grand apiece. How come we don't see that? In fact, what I see over at these Occupies are mostly tarps. The $2 tarps that keep your stuff dry. The $10 tents from your local dollar store. I'm not seeing a big ticket outlays here. I'm seeing people who are struggling just to get enough to eat. So this frame that, well, you know, Soros is funding it and big labor is funding it. Not happening. And what scares me, as we move down the road, and I said this, you know, after the 2010 election, what I worry about is the ping pong politic. The pendulum quickly swinging back and forth and erratically. What I'm worried about, and we are in a critical time, no doubt about it. This country could easily slip into a right-wing fascist state. And in fact, there are some folks that I know who believe we're here now. But the frames that were being told, I wouldn't buy. You know, I love the Patriot article saying that, well, you know, here it is 2 years later, and this R.J. Harris from one of the WHP station, he drew 120 people to his Tea Party rally 2 years after it started. And I'm thinking, if that's all he can get out, there's a problem there. Because doesn't he have a couple, like 100-some thousand listeners? So if you're only pulling 1%, maybe a problem. Maybe a problem. A couple other quick stories. And I wonder what the right wing would think if someone threw a chemical bomb at a Tea Party rally. Because that's what happened up in the Occupy Maine. Someone took a Gatorade bottle full of some chemicals and threw it into the area where people had their kitchen and stuff there. I wonder what would have been said. I had to see it in a local newspaper there in Maine. Not much national news there. I'm telling you, don't buy what you're being told. Not at all. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. When we come back, Pedro Rodriguez, Pennsylvania Field Director for the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. Back after this.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I have some great news. You can now get The Rick Smith Show podcast on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or Palm on demand and on the go. Get your class war to go by downloading the Stitcher app on your smartphone by going to Stitcher.com and search for The Rick Smith Show, or go to our website at TheRickSmithShow.com and click on our Stitcher button. Together we can and we will rebuild a prosperous working class and leave opportunity for our children.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. Walmart is taking their rollback price-cutting model to employee health care plans. New part-time employees in the United States that work less than 24 hours a week will no longer be provided health care. The world's largest retailer also plans to start charging workers who use tobacco products more for coverage. The company is also slashing how much it puts into the employee health care expense accounts by 50%. These changes will take effect starting in January. A prayer service reflecting on a moral economy has been published by Interfaith Worker Justice. Doug Cunningham has more on the story.
The Interfaith Worker Justice Occupy Prayer Service is designed to help people reflect on a moral economy within the context of their religious traditions. It's written for clergy and religious leaders. Interfaith Worker Justice says faith calls people to action to support justice and morality for workers. Joe Hopkins, an IWJ young adult missionary, was one of 175 people recently arrested in a nonviolent Occupy Chicago civil disobedience. Hopkins says people of faith can imagine a just world where families live together in their houses, the sick and elderly get care, and workers receive just payment. Interfaith Worker Justice Executive Director Kim Bobo says that the core issues driving the Occupy protests are the growing inequality in America and the lack of responsiveness on that and the jobs crisis from Congress. The Interfaith Worker Justice Occupy prayer services can be downloaded at their website, IWJ.org. From November 17th through the 20th, Interfaith Worker Justice, together with faith and labor communities nationwide, will hold actions aimed at an economic system oriented around just jobs.
The National Taxi Workers Alliance officially became a member of the AFL-CIO on October 20th. The taxi workers are the 57th organization to join the federation and the first chartered union in 5 years. The taxi workers also represent the changing face of organized labor in the United States. Due to standing in solidarity over the last decade, the taxi workers forced New York City to negotiate with the workers as a collective when dealing with taxi-related issues.
Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Smith.
At every trough you stop to feed, with your arrogance, your ignorance and greed. Now here come the cuts and redundancy, through the absolute indifference, the avarice, incompetence, your arrogance, your ignorance, your greed.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. Question, comment, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com, or give us a call, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. So this week, the secretive debt commission, the super secret Congress, whatever name they go by, the Heavy 12 are going to be having an open meeting sometime this week. And you got to wonder what they're going after. You know, like I said earlier, the fact that in 2005 Bush came out and was soundly rejected with his privatization scheme of Social Security. Now all of a sudden here we are a short time later back on the table. You gotta be afraid of that. That's why I've asked Pedro Rodriguez, Pennsylvania field director for the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare, their website, ncpssm.org, or you can just go to the rickSmithShow.com and click on Pedro's name. Pedro, thanks for taking time for me.
Hey, great to be here, Rick.
You know,
how are you doing?
I'm good. So Social Security's broke, I'm told.
Well, you know, this super secret super committee wants to put its sticky fingers on Social Security. And like you were saying before, you know, the this right-wing gang that we have in Congress wants to go back to an issue that was defeated soundly when President Bush won re-election and tried to privatize Social Security. So they're back at it again.
Yeah, I mean, they're back at it. And what bothers me is it's gaining some traction with some folks even after the collapse of 2008, which, you know, in 2005 I was saying, what happens if we gamble Social Security on Wall Street and, like we eventually did, we lose?
We lose big time, and our grandparents, we lose big time. Our parents, we lose big time, and the entire nation, we lose big time. You know what? I was at a Occupy University of Pennsylvania event on Friday, where Mr. Cantor was scheduled to speak. You know, he canceled the speech when he got wind that there were going to be a thousand people outside challenging him on a number of issues. And the question was put by a retired teacher by the name of Ken. And he asked the crowd, about 500 people outside Huntsman Hall, do you want Wall Street to manage your Social Security? And he got resounding hell no from the crowd there. And that crowd included a lot of young people who really understand that the smoking screen being put out saying that the system is untenable, that it is insolvent, that it is a bunch of baloney.
It's absolutely a bunch of baloney, but you know what? What amazes me? There's so much money out there pushing this scheme. There's so much money in trying to tell us that, oh, this is the wave of the future. Just like here in Pennsylvania, they're trying to push these vouchers down our throats. And there's plenty of money to run ads of why we should privatize our schools. And there's plenty of money to tell us why we should be doing cyber schools and charter schools. There's all this money for that, but there's no money to fix what few schools are having trouble.
And absolutely. You know, this whole issue that Social Security is being lumped in with the whole question of the budget deficit. And let's be clear. Social Security has nothing to do with the budget deficit. It has its own set of money set aside. People pay into the money is invested in Treasury notes, which are backed by the full weight and faith of the United States government. So that's a secure money. It has nothing to do with the deficit. Some people are buying this whole issue, but not that many. Actually, and Rick, you'd be interested in this, the National Committee commissioned a national poll that was released on September 22nd. And the good thing about this poll, it was conducted by two well-respected polling outfits. One is the Lake Research Partners, which is Linda Lake, is very preferred Democratic pollster. And the American Viewpoint, is used by mostly Republican pollsters and the Republican Party. And he found that 70% of people who vote oppose cost of Social Security and Medicare as a way to reduce the deficit.
Yeah, I mean, because
and surprisingly, 58% of Republicans are in the same camp.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing that we're all going to look forward to at some point when we retire. We're hoping that it's going to be there to provide that safety net so that we don't live in poverty. That we know, that's tangible. We know we're going to get that. Unlike, you know, the idea that someday I'm going to be a billionaire, which is a hope and a dream, someday I know Social Security is going to be there for me.
And that's one thing that the American people understand, that, you know, they have that there. I mean, the way that savings is going And how many private companies are offering pensions to their workers now?
Not many.
You tell me. I mean,
especially not the defined benefit kind. Everything's here. Here's a couple of bucks to gamble on Wall Street so that we can make you one of those people who check the business page every day to check my stocks.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And then they go in, the super committee is also trying to further privatize Medicare and reduce Medicaid to something that would be unrecognizable. You know, although you can say that Medicare and Medicaid contribute to the deficit because part of the expenses are covered by the general fund, the problem is not the number of people who are getting Medicare and Medicaid.
Yeah, because private employers have walked away from it and people are unemployed.
And health care costs. There's
yep.
nothing checking health care costs. I mean, hopefully the Affordable Care Act will rein in some of those costs. Some of the cost increases over the years, but one of the biggest impediments that we have right now is that the federal government, Medicare, cannot sit down with the drug companies and say, I have 50 million customers. What price will you give me for Lipitor?
Yeah, I mean, you would think the Republicans who are all about the market and all about, you know, consumers and all about, you know, the whole, you know, consumer advocacy, or so they claim, they would have been in favor of negotiating for drug prices, but not so much.
It is clear that a lot of these is dictated by Wall Street. Wall Street is salivating at the prospect of getting the accounts of 156 million Americans with Social Security, and they're salivating about further privatization of Medicare, and the sky is the limit.
Yeah.
I have said for years that I have yet to meet a drug company who will look at a public-funded institution and not try to dismantle it by, you know, stealing every cent and dime that they can get their hands on.
Well, that's the truth.
And the good thing is that people are fighting back.
And that's why people are out in the streets and cities all across this country. That's part of it.
Absolutely. And then I got to tell you, you come down to Occupy Philly, you're going to find senior citizens and retirees there every day.
We were out there for the first day and a half, and you know, a lot of it's what we found. The generations were all there, young people saying we need to save Social Security, and old people saying, look, I've got it good. I want to make sure that it's passed on to my children and grandchildren. And I think that's why it's such a popular thing. But we keep being fed this frame, Pedro. That it's broke, the money's gone, it's beyond repair. The only way we can fix it is to privatize it. So let me ask you, because I've got a theory on how to fix it. If it is broken, A, is it broken? And B, is there a fix if it is?
You know, it's not broken. The program is sound. It's not broken. By law, the trustees of the Social Security are required to make projections 35 years into the future about the health of the program. Now, you tell me, where else did that happen? Only here in the United States.
Right.
We have that kind of requirement.
And the post office.
That's a different story. And I know you had some discussions about that in the past. That's new. The post office is new. But the Social Security go back for a while. And then the projections they make, they adopt a rate of growth for the national economy that only until recently, only until the current recession, have the U.S. economy performed below the projections of the trustees.
Right. If our economy turns around and things get moving again, that projection goes longer.
People get jobs. I mean, the president's been campaigning now for more jobs for Americans, and the Republican Congress has been saying no and no to job creation. We get more people working, and we don't have to worry about so much about it.
Yep. That's the key. That's the key to all of our problems. And you can go trade deficit. You can go all of the insanity that we've allowed to happen by jobs being shipped out of the country has contributed to our problems. If there is a real true problem, which, again, as I'm looking at it, what is it, 2036?
2036 right now.
When Social Security doesn't pay 100% of its benefits.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's not like it ends in 2036. It just drops down a little bit.
Absolutely. I mean, the program has been running a surplus for years. If a minor tweaking with some things that doesn't reduce benefits, doesn't increase the retirement age, doesn't reduce the cost of living adjustment for current people getting Social Security benefits, without doing all of that, if you just remove the cap, which is $106,000 right now, you bring it up to another figure, let's say $240,000, $250,000. That would take care of it for another 40 years or so.
I'm a big fan of lowering the rate. You want to talk about an economic stimulus? Lower that rate that I pay and take the cap off completely. Make it, 6 or 7%. Both sides, 6 or 7% total. More people have money in their pocket, and we're taxing more at the top. I think it's a viable solution, but it's one that the investor class is never going to allow to happen.
And then just go back to the issue on the table. If you want to deal with deficit problems, Social Security is now the culprit. And the solutions that have been offered are just not solutions that deal directly with the structure and nature of Social Security. Privatizing the program does not solve that problem.
Nope, not
you know,
at all.
It's interesting. You know, there's been a lot of publicity about how some municipalities in Texas opted out of Social Security. And there was a story done recently about a judge who pushed for this separation of the county employees from Social Security. And the guy, they went out and did their own thing. They went in the stock market. This judge got a annuity, not an annuity, but he took installment payments for his retirement.
Right.
But he's still alive, but he ran out. And guess what he gets now? He gets Social Security.
He gets
Social Security now. So this is the other, you know, some economists and some people on Wall Street, they give the example of Chile. And then the privatization of the retirement fund in Chile was done under the fascist dictator Pinochet.
Yep.
Well, guess one group that was excluded from the privatization scheme?
Pinochet.
The military forces. The army in Chile was not part of it. So a lot of retirees and a lot of workers in Chile who retire found their pensions, their social security net, reduced to nothing because of the fluctuation of the Chilean stock market.
And you got Herman Cain running around saying how wonderful it would be if we could just follow the Chilean model.
Howard Cain has no idea what he's talking about. He doesn't understand what has happened, nor really has been able to listen to anyone who knows what the Chilean model was.
Yeah, see, but here's the thing, Pedro, and this is where maybe I'll disagree with you. I think he knows exactly what he's talking about. Because under that system, the money rose upward. The banks made huge fees. The financiers made huge money. The people at the top did very, very well. It's all those poor people down at the bottom who were relying on that to retire on, and now they can't retire, and they're going to have to work till they die. And that's what the goal here is, to take any retirement security away from you and me and make sure that we're good little worker bees.
I don't know, Rick. I get the people the benefit of the doubt sometimes.
I've got no doubt that that's it. It's all about feeding the monster on Wall Street. It's all about putting money in his pocket. How else can you justify the 999 plan or any of the other insanity that he's come out with or any on the radical right? But that's a whole argument for another day. Let me bring it back to our discussion here, Pedro. What do we do? I mean, the super committee, the super secret committee, you know there's going to be some cuts on the table. How do we stop this? How do we get people active? You know, what are you guys calling for over at the National Committee to preserve Social Security and Medicare?
And what we're calling for is if you're angry about what you're hearing that the super committee is going to do to Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, express that anger. There are many ways to do it. You can join us on many of the activities we're doing across Pennsylvania and across this nation today. We're keeping a very close eye on the work of the super committee, but we're also holding elected officials responsible and accountable for what's going on in Washington. There is a disconnect between Washington and what happens in places like Pennsylvania at the grassroots level, the street level. But we want people to make sure their voices are heard by those elected officials. They're the ones who should be held accountable for what happened, for the future of the program. They are the ones who should be able to be called to answer what is it that they're planning to do. No more secrecy. We want transparency. And we want people to write letters, we want people to make phone calls, we want people to show up at the offices for the selected members of Congress, we want people to join events like Occupy, and we want you out there. We want you out there in numbers. We want you there where we're friends. We want you out there with visible signs so people across this country know how you feel and how you stand on this issue.
Yep. Men, women, children, grannies with their walkers, everybody.
Absolutely. And if you cannot get there, give us a call. We may find a way to get you to where you want to go.
Absolutely.
And everybody can do something about it.
Yep, absolutely.
If,
again, the
if
website.
If you're homebound, you can still make a phone call. And if you're homebound, you can still write a letter. And you can call a friend. You can urge other people to get active because we cannot let this moment go without our voices being heard.
No, you can't have it
otherwise,
taken away from you without a fight.
Absolutely. You cannot take this one laying down.
And again, the website is ncpssm.org, or just simply go to thericksmithshow.com and click on Pedro Rodriguez's name. It'll take you right there. Pedro, great talking with you. Keep up the fight and come back again real soon.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Thanks so much. Pedro Rodriguez, Pennsylvania Field Director for the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. Again, just go to thericksmithshow.com and click on Pedro's name for more information. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Shipping it offshore to the job you're looking for.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
In response to the Supreme Court's freakish decision in 2010 to bestow political personhood on corporations, I got an email from a guy named Larry screaming that big money has plucked our eagle. Yes, it has. And the powers that be tell us that we shouldn't even try to undo this theft of our people's democratic authority, but instead should just try regulating corporate money, like maybe requiring them to disclose how much they're spending on campaigns. Now there's a bold stand for democracy. Give us campaign finance reporting regulations or give us death. Come on, we're bigger than that. Here are just a few actions for real change that you can take, teaming up with others right where you live. Amend. Two major coalitions are organizing to overturn the court's corporate money edict by amending the Constitution. One is freespeechforpeople.org, and the other is movetoamend.org. And both have action kits for raising the issue locally, petitions to be circulated, video and other good graphics to educate people, and a wealth of other organizing ideas. Localize. Pass your own local and state laws to stop the wholesale corporate purchase of our government. These include outlawing any corporate claim of personhood in your area, providing the alternative of public financing for your local and state elections, and banning campaign donations by corporations that try to get government contracts and subsidies. For information and help, check out publiccampaign.org and reclaimdemocracy.org. Confront. Yes, get in the face of power. Ask all candidates where they stand on corporate personhood and demand that top executives of big corporations located in your area publicly agree not to spend corporate cash on your elections. This is Jim Hightower saying, remember, the Constitution plainly says we the people, not we the corporations.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Exposing GOP hypocrisy, The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Ever check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Also, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com, or give us a call here, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Let's go to the phone lines. We've got Stosh on line one. How you doing tonight, Stosh?
All right, Rick. Remember a couple of weeks ago when I was saying a lot of people who weren't able to help Occupy should take the money out the bank?
Yep.
But it's catching on. It's catching on.
Yep, November 5th and November 12th.
It's on the news this evening.
Yeah, I think we talked about it last week. November 5th is the big day, the bank transfer day. In fact, a little bit later on the program, we're going to talk to somebody who I think you should go take your money to, the good folks over at PSECU, the people I've been banking with for some time, and folks who do a little advertising here on the program so that we're able to bring this to you every night.
I put my money out of Wells Fargo.
Good for you.
Yes, sir. But, yeah, I just was hoping that you would mention, if you can't get down to help Occupy, pull your money out of these big banks.
Yep.
And mention it every show. But I've been listening for it to happen every show, and I don't hear it all the time, Rick. So please step it up.
All righty. I will most certainly do that. In fact, like I said, you know, we're having Greg Smith on in a little bit. Hopefully you'll take your money over to the PSECU, the credit union that I use. Because I don't understand why people use banks at all. You should be going to credit unions anyway. They did some smart stuff, kept themselves out of the big trouble. We should have let the big banks fail. And I was an advocate for that from the beginning. The reality was, is if we let them fail, we fail with them.
No, I don't think it happened like that. But I was for them. Let them sink.
Actually,
do I have a swim or drown?
Yeah, but then they pull us down. What I said from the very beginning was, you make those people whole at the bottom, and all that will save upward. That didn't happen though. So, November 5th and November 12th. November 5th is the National Transfer Day, and November 12th is the day that you're supposed to be closing your accounts at all of the too-big-to-fail banks.
Why do we have to wait that long? That's my wonder.
Well, I mean, it's the symbolism. It's, you know, they're trying to build a movement across the country so that you have the show of large numbers of people all at once. It's the messaging that goes with it, that we have the power of organizing, that we have the power of people acting for a collective goal. You know, if they see a million people trickle in, couple here, couple here, couple here, that's one thing. But if they see a million people in one day saying, screw you, we're leaving, that sends a powerful message of unity and class solidarity in this country, something that is sorely missed.
I can go along with that. We'll just make sure you advertise, publicize it every show, Rick.
I will make sure. I apologize for falling down on the job, Stosh. Won't happen again.
All right, Rick.
Thank you, brother. You know, the reality is he's right. Maybe we haven't done enough of it. So November 5th. Pull your money out of the banks. Take it to a good place. Someone like PSECU. In fact, they're, you know, for union members, if you need a reason, the people that work for them, union members. So good stuff. I don't know if you've seen the reports this week. The SB1 fight is about to ramp up. They're going to be calling for amendments this week, so a vote could be very near. In fact, the people over at the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania, a group who we don't know who funds them, a big right-wing group, they've got tons of cash, evidently. They're saying, hey, you know what, keep on those Republicans. We're going to run more ads against people like Pat Vance, who I'm not a big fan of. But, you know, they're really going after her with a vengeance, saying she's too liberal. I guess anything to the left of Attila the Hun is too liberal. Amazing. But, you know, these are the times we live in, folks. And this whole privatization scheme, there is so much money, so much big corporate money into privatizing. I mean, every time you turn around, you're hearing ads for this and ads for that, and you're seeing politicians getting somebody told me today that Hardy Williams and a handful of other legislators were handed, in this year alone, somewhere around $5 million in handouts from the privatization crew. You're telling me that we're privatizing for the good of the students? Because, oh, we just care so much. These billionaires, these really super rich people who, you know, evidently were told know how to handle money and know how to do the right thing with money. They're just throwing it away. They're lighting it on fire and throwing it away for no reason. Oh, no, wait a minute. They have altruistic goals. We really care about those poor inner city kids. We really care. Nonsense. They see profit. They see mega dollar signs, which is why people like Rupert Murdoch, people like Jeb Bush, people like Neil Bush, why you see all these people rushing into education. There's a lot of money in it. You know, you look at those proprietary tests. I didn't know 2+2 had an owner. Evidently, in today's day and age, you put it on a piece of paper and a school has to buy it. It's their test now. And you have to pay them. I mean, maybe I'm old. But I actually remember the teacher going and writing down the test with pencil, with a pen, and then photocopying it, bringing it back. Well, here's your test. Congratulations. It wasn't the high-tech gadgetry. It wasn't, you know, all of this. I'm just amazed that we have been bamboozled into this, and we continue to allow ourselves to be screwed into this. Where's the outrage? And maybe, you know, maybe as the one guy told me today, maybe it's, you know, people are struggling and they want to look at teachers as someone who, well, they've got it better than I do and the heck with them and let's get rid of them and we'll privatize it so we can get the cheapest teacher we can possibly get. And I remember back to one of the things my friend said who retired as a teacher said, you know, when we were starving, when we were dependent on little Johnny or little Susie to bring an apple in so that we could have lunch, everybody loved us. As soon as we wanted health care and, oh, a pension and maybe a reasonable living, that's when the public turned and that's when people started bashing us. And I wouldn't want to, my daughter, my 9-year-old goes, I want to be a teacher when I grow up. And I almost did a backflip in the car. I'm going, why would you want to put yourself into that? And she's still idealistic. You know, she's, I want to be a teacher because I love my teacher so much. And, you know, they're so good and they're so, well, why in God's name would you want to be a teacher? And take the abuse that these people are taking. I wouldn't wish that on anyone today. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Let's come back and talk about the other attack that's going on. You know, the economy's on the downswing. We saw last week that more than 15,000 jobs lost in the state of Pennsylvania, 8,200 of them in the public sector, and now they want to privatize the wine and spirit shops, another 3,200 out in the street. Back after this.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
With a PSECU home equity line of credit, you can use the equity in your house to pay for things you want. Whether it's a trip to the beach, a new deck for fun summer parties, or a little consolidation to get your bills in order, we've got our rate so low, you'll want to raise the roof. A 3.25 annual percentage rate will fit into any budget. Additional rates and terms are available. Summer's a great time to start knocking off items on your to-do list. Replace the gutters that didn't survive the storms. Make over your kitchen with new paint and energy-efficient appliances. Or maybe it's time to add a deck so you can enjoy your staycation in style. We've got fast approvals, no appraisal or credit report fee, and no prepayment penalties. Financing life is what we do best, so talk with us. For additional rates and terms, call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pseCU.com/life.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make it happen!
Scott Right Wing. Just Race. The Rick Smith Show.
I work for the state now, helping kids with disabilities. I love the work, make the rules for bosses than you would believe. We had layoffs again this morning. I got my children now that I can see. Parents are angry, how can I blame them? They end up blaming me. When did I become a problem?
Well, right when you started asking to make a living, you bum. You should be working for starvation wages, no health care, no benefits. How dare you? 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. That's what they'll tell you. You know, you make too much money, oh, you have health care. And, you know, you look at Larry Michaud, the guy, one of the folks over at the Economic Policy Institute. He's pointed out some interesting data that between 1979 and 2007, the folks at the very top, that heavy 1%, their take of the economy grew by 224%. 224%. The bottom 90% of us, 5%. Now, you talk about redistribution of wealth. You talk about, and I love my teabag friends who go, "Hey, you're talking about redistribution of wealth." Yeah, I kind of am. And someone sent me a graph today with the productivity numbers and wages. Productivity has skyrocketed. It has continually gone up since the 40s and up and up and up. It has never gone down. It keeps going up because we keep working harder. We keep working longer. But somewhere around the 80s, that graph kind of lost us. Productivity kept going up. And up until the 80s, as productivity went up, wages went up. So the more work we did, the more money we made. Something happened in the early 80s that caused that to flatten out. So as productivity went up, wages just stagnated, flatlined right across the graph. And I can't for the life of me figure out what that was. I'm sure there was somebody responsible. I'm sure there had to be. I'm sure there was an administration back in the day, probably a guy who, memorized his lines pretty well. Give a trained actor credit for memorizing lines. But I'm sure it had something to do with him. Just a thought. So anyway, as you see the reports coming out, they're still talking about privatizing the state wine and spirit shops. And a draft proposal has been kind of leaked, kind of put out, however you want to put it, and the numbers kind of skewed. So I asked my religious friends, because they were talking about the number of licenses that need to be sold to get to the magic number of $1.1 billion, and they're talking about a number of 1,500 of these residential licenses. Now, understand, there are only 630 state-owned stores right now, and they're talking about replacing them with some 1,500 of these liquor outlets. Other options that were in this report were 3,500 retail licenses, and those would be for a fixed price. They claim that it would raise somewhere around $475 million. So to get to their magic number, and again, understand that you and I own this asset. We own these stores. They want to hock these off for a one-time lottery winning that does nothing to really close our budget. It's a one-shot deal. They want to get rid of some 3,200 employees at a time when? Oh, that's right. We're losing jobs. So explain to me how this is good for the economy. 3,200 people out in the streets. And then on the rolls of the unemployment line. Nothing about this plan, nothing about it, is attractive to me. The possibilities of 3,500 retail licenses in this state, up from 630, I got to tell you, scares me. Now, when I was a kid, I think I would have liked it, because when I lived in Cleveland, and I've told this story before, liquor was everywhere. It's an impulse item right there next to the Tic Tacs at the checkout counter. I could go in and I could swipe a bottle of vodka and walk out and grab my Tic Tacs on the way out the door and then get in the car and drive. This is what they want to turn this state into. I mean, is anybody upset about this? I mean, if you stop and think about the asset that we have, it's paying what? $500 million in taxes to the state, taxes that we don't have to pay. The report also said, and for you tax junkies, for you anti-tax people, Central Pennsylvania, you are screwed. Because they're saying, well, we might not get as much for licensing, and the taxes may be a little higher, the prices will probably be a little higher in areas where there isn't as much business. The urban centers, they'll do all right because there's a lot of volume. They'll be able to do okay. But here in this area, the less populated areas, you're probably screwed. You're probably going to pay higher prices. And not to mention, for you tax people, there is going to be a higher tax when they go to this gallonage tax. So, you look at the Terzai plan, and they're calling this the Terzai tax. Very nice and very apropos. But at the end of the day, this isn't the money that we were told. This isn't the $2 billion. It's nowhere near that. Nowhere in the report does it say $2 billion. But that's what we were told from the beginning, Jake. It's going to bring in $2 billion. We're going to have all this money, and it's going to clear our budget gap, and everybody's going to be happy. Not the case.
Well, 2 points. First of all, the privatization. I guarantee you, you're not going to get accurate reports as to how much they sell. As of right now, you have employees working for the state whose job it is to report to the dollar what is owed the state. The second point is, you mentioned, and I have the figures in front of me, $3,500. The original proposal by Terzai was $1,250. Now, do the numbers, that's almost a 300% increase. And all along, we were making the point, as were others, and a lot of Republicans who come from conservative districts were getting hit by their constituency saying, hey, you know, this is going to have an adverse effect on, you know, on breaking of the law, on more laws violated, on more drinking, underage drinking. And those who are advocating changing over to a privatization system are saying, whoa, no, that's not, come on. If you're going to increase the number of stores available, there's going to be a dramatic increase in drinking, and I guarantee you, you're not going to have the safeguards, and I guarantee you're going to have increasing crime involving alcohol, and you're going to have more underage drinking. I guarantee it. And that's one of the things right now behind the scenes, Rick, that even a good number of the Republicans are having problems with their constituents. They know what the price is going to be if they go to a privatized system.
And, you know, I look at this, and again, you know, what's funny to me is when they did some polling, when they started looking around, most people aren't interested in the liquor stores. They want to buy beer at the grocery stores. And now you got the beer people going, well, wait a minute, we weren't on the radar. No, don't come after us. Mm-hmm. Leave us alone. We're happy where we're at. Go after those liquor people. And look, most people don't want, you don't want to be able to buy Jack Daniels on the right next to the milk, but you wouldn't mind buying a six-pack. And even I say that, you know, if you're going to sell any alcohol in the store, it should be a six-pack of beer you can pick up with your chips or whatever. But then again, you go to that next argument, the libertarian argument. I should be able to buy my milk and my beer and my Jack Daniels and my heroin and my crack and do my lottery tickets and my sports book gambling and go to that drugstore and get whatever I need. That's the libertarian view. I should be able to do it all.
Well, but let's back up here. Let's look at, this is supposedly a solution, but what's the problem?
There is no problem.
There is no problem. The state liquor stores in this state, no matter what your position, at the end of the day, you have to admit, it allowed the people of Pennsylvania to, in a very common sense, logical way, it allowed them access to alcohol, and it minimized the negative.
It controlled what it is. I mean,
absolutely.
It's a
controlled, and it did it effectively.
And it's a controlled drug, I think. You know, look, if I want my alcohol, I know where it is. I know where to go for it. And I think it should be an adult item. Should not be an impulse item. Going, gee, you know, I'm feeling kind of bad today. Oh, there's alcohol. Let me reach for that. And the other part that nobody's talked about. Once we privatize this, that 1% tax that we give to retailers just because they pay their taxes on time. We're going to have to extend to that. So, again, we're losing more revenue. And, you know, I don't care where your position is. For me, I really don't care if it's privatized or not. I look at it from the sight of a businessman. How much more am I going to end up paying in taxes? This asset that we have, the state wine and spirit shops, this asset that we are all shareholders in, you know, what happens when we lose that money?
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. Walmart is taking their rollback price-cutting model to employee health care plans. New part-time employees in the United States that work less than 24 hours a week will no longer be provided health care. The world's largest retailer also plans to start charging workers who use tobacco products more for coverage. The company is also slashing how much it puts into the employee health care expense accounts by 50%. These changes will take effect starting in January. a prayer service reflecting on a moral economy, has been published by Interfaith Worker Justice. Doug Cunningham has more on the story.
The Interfaith Worker Justice Occupy Prayer Service is designed to help people reflect on a moral economy within the context of their religious traditions. It's written for clergy and religious leaders. Interfaith Worker Justice says faith calls people to action to support justice and morality for workers. Joe Hopkins, an IWJ young adult missionary, was one of 175 people recently arrested in a nonviolent Occupy Chicago civil disobedience. Hopkins says people of faith can imagine a just world where families live together in their houses, the sick and elderly get care, and workers receive just payment. Interfaith Worker Justice Executive Director Kim Bobo says that the core issues driving the Occupy protests are the growing inequality in America and the lack of responsiveness on that and the jobs crisis from Congress. The Interfaith Worker Justice Occupy prayer services can be downloaded at their website, IWJ.org. From November 17th through the 20th, Interfaith Worker Justice, together with faith and labor communities nationwide, will hold actions aimed at an economic system oriented around just jobs.
The National Taxi Workers Alliance officially became a member of the AFL-CIO on October 20th. The taxi workers are the 57th organization to join the federation and the first chartered union in 5 years. The taxi workers also represent the changing face of organized labor in the United States. Due to standing in solidarity over the last decade, the taxi workers forced New York City to negotiate with the workers as a collective when dealing with taxi-related issues.
Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Well, what you do is you take that money and you run to the nearest credit union, small local bank, and that's where you put your money. In fact, November 5th, just around the corner, the folks over at Move Your Money Project, moveyourmoneyproject.org, they're promoting the idea that we consumers, we take our money out of those too-big-to-fail banks and we head to somewhere else. We put an end to too-big-to-fail ourselves. We promote smaller banks, credit unions. The idea, I guess, is to invest in Main Street, not Wall Street. Save a little money in the process and get better service. So November 5th, Bank Transfer Day, and one of the places I've been telling folks like Stosh earlier to go and move their money to is our good friends over at PSECU, and I've got their president and CEO, Greg Smith, on the line. Greg, thanks for taking time for me.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, I look at this bank transfer day, and it's something I've been calling for the longest time. You know, why would you want to be somewhere where they obviously don't want you when they slap you with fees like the Bank of America $5 for the debit cards?
Well, at PSECU, Rick, we certainly appreciate the opportunity banks are giving us, and we're going to be open on Saturday, November 5th, and our call centers will be open, our branches will be open, so for any potential members that would like to find out what it's like to bank at a financial institution where we have your interests at heart, they should check into PSECU.
Now, my listeners know I don't hawk things very often.
Sure.
It's rare that I advocate for any product, corporation, or any of that, but I've always been a big supporter of yours because, to be honest, I've done some dumb things over the past. I forgot to transfer money into a checking account one time, and the check came bouncing right back to me, and they forgave it. They said, yeah, put the money in there, you'll be fine. And that's the kind of thing I don't think I would get at Bank of America.
Well, no, and in fact, you know, Rick, you may remember, I think it was about a year ago, the banks had new laws put in place because of all the anti-consumer practices that they'd engaged in relative to the way they process checks. They used to sort them in the highest, in the largest dollar order first, because that literally added billions of dollars to bank fee income, because by processing with the largest item first, they collected more fees. Those kind of things, you know, I'm not a fan of the banks when they do things like that. That's just wrong.
Yeah, yeah. You had once told me an interesting analogy about holding banks and bankers to a higher standard because you expect that of them. Much like the police, you expect them to be at a higher standard than, say, a criminal. I would expect the banks to be at a higher standard as well, and we should hold them to a higher standard.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing about banks, Rick, banks are a for-profit institution.
Understood.
And that contrasts with credit unions, which are not in profit. Banks' customers are kind of an ends to a means. The customer is how the bank makes its money, and with the profit that it makes off the customer, it uses that money to do what it's supposed to do under the economic model. It's supposed to maximize shareholder value. So the profits that they make off of the customer go back to the shareholders. Well, in the credit union model, and you can't really fault banks for doing that.
I don't.
You know, I don't really fault Bank of America for raising that fee. I mean,
they can get away with it.
At least it's transparent. I mean, some of the other fees that they charge weren't so transparent, and those are the things that I think are really wrong.
Well, let me ask you this. How much do you think Bank of America just wanted to get rid of some of those people who wouldn't pay the $5?
Well, there could be some of that going on. And we're happy to welcome those people. We're ready to take those members in and show them what a financial institution that has their interests at heart can really be like. They won't believe the difference.
Yeah. And I know I didn't. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Greg Smith, President and CEO of PSECU. PSECU.org is their website. We've got a link at TheRickSmithShow.com. Just click on Greg Smith's name. It'll take you right there. Let me ask you this, because I've had a number of people go, well, you know, I went to a credit union once, and they said I had to be a member of this or that, and it was kind of a real hassle. I mean, one of the credit unions said, well, you can join this antique car club, and then you'll be a member. What do you have to do to be a member of PSECU?
Well, you know, that is something that we're still restrained by, Rick. Credit unions are given a license by the state or the federal government. In PSECU's case, we're given a license by the state. And we can't really serve the general public, but we serve people who are members of groups or who work at a certain company. One of our large employers, the state, is how a lot of people qualify for membership in PSECU. But we also do have some of these other groups. And actually at PSECU, we've added groups, not the Antique Car Club, but the Pennsylvania Recreation and Park Society. If a person can't qualify for membership from one of over something like 600 different groups that we have, in our field of membership, then they can join the Recreation and Park Society. I believe it costs $20, and PSECU actually covers half of that. So for $10, they can join that association, and then that makes them eligible for membership in PSECU. And Rick, I'll tell you, the person who joins that way, and again, there are a lot of other ways that they can qualify that don't cost them anything at all, but if that's the only option that they have, they're going to recover that $10 so fast that the return on investment on that $10. Just real quickly, we just raised our surcharge rebate. Here's something I would challenge any of your listeners to find: a financial institution, find a bank in Pennsylvania that pays $20 of your surcharges every month.
And that surcharges on your ATM
That's
withdrawals.
Right. And the condition for that as a PSECU member, if you have direct deposit with PSECU, we will cover up to $20 in your ATM surcharges every month. So what that means to our member, you know, when a person joins a financial institution, one of the first things they want to know is, where can I go to get my money? And take Bank of America, for example. B of A will advertise that, well, we have ATMs. We have 15,000 ATMs, they might say. I think that's pretty close to the number that they have. They're all over the country. Okay, well, PSECU can tell its members, well, we have 500,000 ATMs, because that's the number of ATMs that are in the country, all different banks, all different financial institutions. But since we cover your surcharges, as long as you keep the number of those reasonable, you know, and don't go, you know, to the ATM every day and, you know, run up surcharges over $20 in a month, you're covered.
Yep. And
you can basically go to 500,000 different ATMs in the country, which means the ultimate inconvenience. You don't have to worry about where you're going, really. You can use any ATM that's convenient to you.
Yeah, but here's the thing. As a member, and I kind of feel that membership thing, I try to go to places that accept my card without a fee.
Sure, like absolutely. Any of the credit unions. Hope members will do that, too. Sure, Rick.
Because, you know, I don't want to give the big banks anything. Nothing at all. So that's where I'm at. Pretty simple stuff. Yeah. So the reality is folks have an opportunity to join PSECU. Again, we've got a link at our site at thericksmithshow.com. Just click on Greg Smith's name.
And Rick, they'll also save money on their loans. Our new car, five-year rate right now, 2.49.
Wow.
Nobody, you know, you can't find a bank lending at that rate.
So why are there any banks still around? I mean, why do people go there?
You know, that's a good question.
And it's not
maybe after Bank Transfer Day we'll cut the number down.
We'll have to look at that. And it's not just because PSECU is one of our advertisers, and we appreciate that that help. But not just because I'm a member, because I think it's the right thing though. And I appreciate the work you folks do there. This is a way we end too big to
we
fail.
We work for our members, Rick.
And you know the best thing about it, you know, for my union listeners, the people who work for you,
yeah,
union members.
That's correct.
And that's another thing. Another good. So, Greg Smith, I appreciate the work you guys do there. And thanks for coming on and talking to us a little bit about it. Thank you. I normally don't go into the whole advertising mode. I hate when Glenn Beck and all the other ones do. But, you know, with November 5th being Bank Transfer Day, this was a perfect opportunity. And it's something that I believe in. You know, I've said before, I've done some dumb things. Like I sent in a check one time that I didn't sign. And they sent it back to me. $2. That was what I was fined. $2.
Well, the simple difference, and it's a huge difference, is the big banks have to make a profit. They have investors, whereas the credit union exists for the sole purpose of serving its members.
Yeah, you know, I've got no problem with that. But understand that when you're going in, and look, there's part of me that looks at this Bank Transfer Day. The Bank of America, they're going, good, goodbye. We don't want to service those accounts. They're now going to be a hassle. We're not going to be able to screw them anymore. So let them go somewhere else. We just want to deal with the high investor, the high dollar people, so we can make more money off of them.
Well, I have an account with my credit union, by the way. My union started it, the one in the Hershey area. But I have to say, I also have an account at a bank. And since I was a young man, it's probably changed hands 5 times, and I can guarantee you, Rick, every time it changed hands, the fees went up.
So November 5th, you pulling your money out? Bank transfer day.
I will think about it.
I'll think about it. That's pathetic. Just pathetic.
Well, no, wait a minute. How about if I transfer all the money out and keep the account?
Why would you do that?
New convenience, but... But I seriously consider it.
Seriously?
I already have an account with my credit union, so I have both.
How many bank accounts do you need? How rich are you? How loaded are you? Because you got more than one bank.
That's not a matter. It's not.
Mister, I've got 17 credit cards.
Actually, yeah, well, no, it's down to about 6. I have to say, my credit union, now that I think about it, they've expanded, and they have made my credit union accessible to a lot more people. They have several branches, and they've done a great job.
Yeah, well, again, November 5th, it is Bank Transfer Day, and a good place to take your money. Our friends over at PSECU website, PSECU.org. Quick break back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425.
You're listening.
listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
In response to the Supreme Court's freakish decision in 2010 to bestow political personhood on corporations, I got an email from a guy named Larry screaming that big money has plucked our eagle. Yes, it has. And the powers that be tell us that we shouldn't even try to undo this theft of our people's democratic authority, but instead should just try regulating corporate money, like maybe requiring them to disclose how much they're spending on campaigns. Now there's a bold stand for democracy. Give us campaign finance reporting regulations or give us death. Come on, we're bigger than that. Here are just a few actions for real change that you can take, teaming up with others right where you live. Amend. Two major coalitions are organizing to overturn the court's corporate money edict by amending the Constitution. One is freespeechforpeople.org, and the other is movetoamend.org. And both have action kits for raising the issue locally, petitions to be circulated, video and other good graphics to educate people, and a wealth of other organizing ideas. Localize. Pass your own local and state laws to stop the wholesale corporate purchase of our government. These include outlawing any corporate claim of personhood in your area, providing the alternative of public financing for your local and state elections, and banning campaign donations by corporations that try to get government contracts and subsidies. For information and help, check out publiccampaign.org and reclaimdemocracy.org. Confront. Yes, get in the face of power. Ask all candidates where they stand on corporate personhood and demand that top executives of big corporations located in your area publicly agree not to spend corporate cash on your elections. This is Jim Hightower saying, remember, the Constitution plainly says we the people, not we the corporations.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
And welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at TheRickSmithShow.com. Question, comment, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. I do answer all emails personally. Also, give us a call here, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. So, Mr. Axis of Evil, he's the one who came up with it, this guy David Frum, a speechwriter during the W years, on his Frum blog or Frum forum or From Flung or whatever it's called. He had an interesting post that I came across, and it's an older post, but he asked the question, were our enemies right? And he goes and he talks about, you know, this Susan Sontag, who, you know, back in 1982, at New York Town Hall made a statement that got everybody all up in arms, but it did get the audience, the left-wing audience, to, you know, kind of think a little bit. And while she was booed and, you know, kick to the curb, it did kind of change things a little bit. And he's like, you know, maybe we're having that moment on the right. Maybe we're having the moment where someone smacked us in the face and said, you know what, everything we believe is wrong. And what he pointed out is that, you know, this woman who, you know, kind of maybe recentered the left. And you may not hear, you know, like he points out, that the American left doesn't support Chavez. He says, you know, if you go Chavez and it has any defenders on the contemporary left, he said, I haven't heard them. The progressives, you know, they've stayed away from that. They've learned. And he talks about this Susan Sontag. You know, says, look, the reality is we have one of those moments. And he goes and he looks back at the collapse of September 2008. And 2 years ago, the Commerce Department estimated the decline of the U.S. economy to be at 0.5% in the third quarter of 2008 and almost 4% in the fourth quarter. Well, that's been revised. And now it's actually 3.7% during the third quarter and almost 9% during the fourth quarter. He's saying that's Great Depression era. That's right there. That puts us right in the Great Depression. And, you know, he goes through and he says, you know, those estimates make make sense as we assess the real-world effects of the crisis. So as you're looking around, you're seeing all these people struggling and suffering and things going on, you go, yeah, it was a lot worse than we were being told. Did you think the Bush administration was going to tell you anything right? No. He said, you know, the jobs lost, the homes foreclosed, the retirement shattered. He said, when people tell me that I've changed my mind too much about too many things over the past 4 years, I can only point to the devastation wrought by this crisis and wonder how closed mind must your thinking be if it isn't affected by a disaster of such magnitude. He says, in fact, almost all of our thinking has been somehow affected, hence the drift of so many conservatives away from what used to be mainstream market-oriented Washington consensus towards more of an Austrian economics or a Ron Paul-style hard-money libertarian. He said, the ground they stand and I used to occupy stands increasingly empty. And he asked the question, imagine, if you will, someone who reads the Wall Street Journal editorial page between 2000 and 2011, and someone in the same period who only read the collected columns of Paul Krugman. Which reader would have been better informed about the realities of the current economic crisis? And he says, the answer, I think, should give us pause. Can it be that our enemies were right? And the reality is Krugman has been right on most things. The stimulus, too small. Said that from the beginning. Gutting the public sector, people lose jobs. The safety net gets overburdened, and guess what? No one's paying into the system. You got problems. And from the beginning, you know, Krugman had it right. You need a big stimulus. You need something chunky, something hefty, something to kickstart and keep people employed. He's been saying that all along. And, you know, people point to the fact that, wow, you had an $800 billion stimulus, of which half of it we gave away in taxes. Well, here, have some tax cuts. Oh, you wealthy people, you too. We kept the Bush tax cuts. And he's saying, look, we should be investing. We should be spending money getting this economy moving. Because when things start moving forward, all of our other problems end. If we had a growing economy, had we done what Joe Sestak said we should have done, a $1 trillion stimulus in actually building stuff, you'd have had people back to work. I've seen people saying $1.5 trillion wouldn't have done it. And you go, oh, but you're talking about borrowing and you're talking about more debt. Yes, this is the time you go into debt, when money's easy to get because the interest rates are so cheap. And two, when you need to jumpstart the economy and get people back to work. But the Republicans stand in stark contrast to that. Somehow to them, cuts, 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 cuts grows jobs. In fact, you had Mitch McConnell, who was on Sunday night with on the State of the Union with Candy Crowley. And, you know, he said, look, at the end of the day, man, layoffs are a local problem. He said, I'm sure Americans do, I certainly do, approve of firefighters and police. The question is whether the federal government ought to be raising taxes on 300 small businesses in order to send money down to bail out the states for whom firefighters and police work. They're local and state employees. And you go, thought we were all in this together. Thought we were one nation, under God, indivisible, except when it comes to tax dollars for the wealthy. I mean, does that rhetoric grab anybody? I mean, I swear, you know, the under God, indivisible thing has to happen in every single, pledge that ever happens. But when it comes to actually doing that, you're on your own, states. You're on your own, local. Amazing stuff. And, you know, every time the president comes out with something, and look, I bust on him when he deserves it. When the president deserves to get smacked, like over the trade agreements, we're going to smack him over.
Absolutely.
But at the end of the day, the guy keeps putting things out saying, here's a jobs plan. Smack, it's smacked away. He puts out another jobs plan. Smack, it's smacked away. Put out something else. No, it's not enough. It's too late. You look at this thing that he wants to do with housing. And student loans, saying, look, we need to help people who are underwater. You already got the Republicans and some Democrats saying, it's not enough, it's too little, it's too much, do that. Nothing's going to get done. I mean, if we don't start somewhere, if we don't start doing something, mm-hmm. we're going to continue where we are.
They had Bernie Sanders on tonight, and I watched him just before it came, you know, and he said, well, president could have done a little better, but what he did was good. I don't know if you looked at the numbers, Rick, but under his proposal, if you're the value of your house has been reduced to a lower number than the total value of your mortgage, you qualify by 25% now. You qualify. I think that's a good deal. And he also, under his program, is going to eliminate refinance fees. I mean, is that enough? It'll help some people. We wish he would have done more, but at least it's something. There's going to be people who are going to be helped.
But one of the things I read about the plan, and it's one of those things that kind of makes you go, well, where'd that come from? They weren't allowed to fall behind on their payments. That's part of being into the program. You could not have fallen behind on your payments. And you know, we've talked to people here who have been trying to go through that loan modification process. What's the first thing they tell all those people? Stop making your payments. So now you're behind on the payments. What's going to happen with these folks? For me, from the beginning, we screwed this up right from the start. And the answer is not the Romney plan, to just let it bottom out and let the investors come in and scoop everything up so they can rent it back to those people. That's not the answer.
Didn't he do this under executive order, Rick?
Yeah, he has.
That's, that does make it different. He's limited. The president, look, he has made a lot of mistakes. You got to give him credit for trying. Is it enough? No. But under the conditions, at least he's trying.
The guy's damned if he does, if he doesn't.
And the Republicans, at the end of the day, their number one priority is to defeat President Obama. Come hell or high water.
We're going to make him a one-term president.
That's exactly right. And that above all else, is their top priority.
And you look at this, Patrick McHenry, Republican from North Carolina, chairman of the House Oversight Subcommittee on TARP, also the financial services and the bailouts of public and private programs. He issued a press statement on Obama's plan, saying that it was too late to help those struggling homeowners. He said today's announcement by the president is just another step in the floundering strategy of an administration that has been grossly incapable of providing meaningful solutions to help struggling homeowners. And my first thought is, Congressman, what have you done? Where's your plan? Where's your idea? What bill did you propose? And when did you do it? When did you decide, these homeowners were worth your time? He goes on to say, when it comes to this administration's housing policies, the time to act has long since passed. More than 6 million Americans are behind on their mortgage payments or facing foreclosures. And the policies of this president have done more harm than good. And again, I ask the question, what have you done? And since you say it's now long since passed, what do we do now? Do you just throw up your hands and say, screw them, let Romney come in and let all those people fail and have the investors come in? Because that is the Republican way. Let the investors come in. And this is what I try and get across the working people. Understand the boom-bust cycle. We have been living under the boom-bust cycle for a couple generations now. And as we boom, 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 middle-class people take on debt. They take on a little bit more. Oh, I'm going to have the American dream. I'm going to buy a nice house. We're going to have nice cars. We're going to have all this nice stuff. And then, boom, what happens? They can't pay for it anymore. And in come the investors, scoop it all up for pennies, and then they sell it back. So you start all over again. And much like with the housing thing. You know, I know people who were in their house just about five and a half years, and then what happened? Boom. It went away. And they had paid all that interest in. They had put their money down. They had done a whole bunch of stuff. You want to talk about a massive ripoff? That's what it is, man. And that's why they keep pushing for policies that will keep us on that boom bust, because they know they're going to be able to ride out the storm. And when the storm happens, they're actually going to do much better because they're going to pick up real estate. They're going to pick up things cheap. They are the vultures, if you will. They're the people who come in after the death, and they suck everything up. And you've got people who listen to these right-wingers going, yeah, that's what we needed. We needed a harder down. We needed a harder down as long as it was someone else. But I don't know any right-wingers who say when they fell behind on their mortgage that, oh, some investor can come in and buy my house, and I'll rent it back from them. That'll be a nice thing to do. You know, it's always when it's somebody else, tough love for somebody else. But for me, I'm different. It's nuts. And this whole idea of the flat tax, when we come back. Steve Womoff, he is a legislative director for the Citizens for Tax Justice. Going to come back and talk about the flat tax. Evidently, tomorrow, Rick Perry going to lay out the plan. Any guesses on what it's going to be? Put your money on flat tax, guaranteed. Back after this.
Just make us be brave. Make us play nice. Let us be together tonight.
Thought-provoking, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class. Rick Smith. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? AFSCME Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show. What they do.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. So tomorrow, like I said, the big day, the unfurling, the big ceremony. Rick Perry's going to lay out his tax plan. Any guesses on progressive tax possible? He's going to endorse the Schakowsky plan? I wouldn't hold my breath. I guess what we need, according to the Perrians, is a flat tax. So I'm just going to save you the surprise. He's going to lay out a flat tax. After all, Steve Forbes did endorse him. So Mr. Flat Tax himself, according to the folks at the Center for Tax Justice, Mr. Flat Tax himself, Steve Forbes, he's going to save about $1.9 billion over the next 30 years under a flat tax. No wonder Steve Forbes will endorse Rick Perry. Anyway, I've asked Steve Womoff, he is the legislative director for Citizens for Tax Justice, to come talk about that $1.9 billion handout that we'll be giving Steve Forbes if we do move to a flat tax, and some of the other tax schemes that are out there, the 999 and the fair tax and all of the other ways to shift from them to us the tax burden. Steve, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
You know, I look at this flat tax, and it's the same old thing that Steve Forbes has been pushing, well, since the 80s, if I remember right. Again,
right.
Nothing good in it for me.
Right, exactly. So, you know, we've been dealing with these proposals, these flat tax proposals for quite a while now. You know, if you think about it, we currently have a progressive personal income tax. The rich pay higher rates. The lower income people pay lower rates. If you replace that with a single rate tax with a rate that's somewhere in between, obviously that means the poor will pay more, the rich will pay less. And what actually makes these plans even worse is that they don't just stop there. They do something else that makes it even worse. They always exempt investment income, yep, which mostly goes toward to the rich. We already have tax breaks in our current system for capital gains and stock dividends, and most of those tax breaks go to the richest 1%. these flat tax proposals would expand that into one great big exemption for investment income. It's sort of like a loophole consolidation plan in a sense, like take all the loopholes that help the rich and consolidate those into one big exemption. So in some sense, there are actually two rates that apply. It would be 0% for investment income that mostly goes to the rich, and whatever the rate will, I think it's going to be 20% with the Perry plan is what applies to other types of income. So it ends up being a plan that raises taxes on the poor, lowers taxes on the rich. You know, the most recent actual legislation that was in Congress to do a flat tax like this was actually Senator Arlen Specter's flat tax legislation, and we ran the numbers on that last year. We found that people who are among the richest 5% would get tax cuts. Particularly in the richest 1%, they would get a tax cut of over $200,000.
Wow.
People in other income levels would get a tax increase of several thousand dollars. So
let me ask you, first off, you know, most people say, well, it's a flat tax. Herman Cain's picked onto a really great marketing ploy, the 999 plan.
Right.
You're going to pay 9% income tax, 9% corporate tax, 9% sales tax. Most people don't get the 9%, 9%, the 9 income, the 9 sales. That's federal tax. That's on top of what you're already paying in state tax.
Right.
And, you know, so let me ask you, the 9, you know, and I've gone through this, you know, pretty extensively over the last couple of weeks, the 9% income tax, his plan, how badly in debt would we be after a year, after 10 years, if we went to this simplistic 999 plan?
I think it would be pretty bad. Like, our numbers show that we would lose substantial revenue, like over $300 billion from the 999 plan in just the first year alone. Now, keep in mind, Herman Cain changes his tax plan about once every 12 hours, so it's a little hard to keep up on the various things he's doing, you know, but, you know, we found that there'd be, you know, again, big tax cuts for the richest 1%, tax increases of several, you know, a couple thousand dollars for people at other income levels. Herman Cain says he's going to do more things, change his plan to help the poor more. I suppose that means it would lose even more revenue. But again, it's impossible to keep up with what Herman Cain is thinking.
Yeah, he's going to help the poor by giving them opportunity zones where there's no minimum wage or labor laws, or going to make those anti-union havens.
Exactly.
So that they can never make their lives better. But they'll have jobs, they just won't pay anything.
Right.
Because, you know, I've said it a number of times, I could easily fix our unemployment problem. I could put everybody to work tomorrow. Granted, they wouldn't have enough money to eat, but they would all have jobs.
Right.
And we could just get rid of that pesky minimum wage and move us right down the way to full employment for a buck an hour, or even a buck a day. So when you look at these schemes, and again, you know, for me, the reality is the more you have, the bigger your shoulders, the more water you can carry.
Mm-hmm.
As a society, there are things that we need. We need children to be educated. We need safe neighborhoods. We seem to be a war society. We need a big military. Who's going to pay for that?
Mm-hmm.
Not the minimum wage worker who works at McDonald's. Maybe the CEO who's doing wildly well. And, you know, I just pointed out a fact from the folks over at the Economic Policy Institute. Larry Michaud said, you know, since over a 10-year period, from I think it was 1979 to 2007 it was, the top 1% saw their incomes grow by 224%. Those of us in the bottom 90%, 5%.
Right.
There's a serious problem with the distribution of wealth in this country, and it's always been my view that it's because of the tax code.
Right. Right. I mean, and that's a big part of it. I think another thing that people just don't think about is that there are so many government services that the rich benefit from more than anybody else. I mean, and we just don't think about it very much. Like, you know, the infrastructure that makes commerce possible so that the businesses they own can sell their products, the protection of property obviously benefits you if you own all the property. Even public education system, which is providing the skilled workforce that, you know, all of the companies that they own, that's where they get their employees. So in a sense, you know, this society that our taxes make possible, it has benefited the very wealthy more than anybody else, and it's just something people just have not given any thought to.
So
they're just not paying their fair share.
You know, the flat tax sounds like a rational idea, though. I mean, to someone who's not looking at it in the big picture, it sounds reasonable. We should all pay the same. We're all in this together. But there's different levels of the same. You know, I'm sorry. You know, I just don't see that minimum wage worker at the McDonald's or any of the fast food joints paying 15% federal tax and still being able to make ends meet.
Right. Right. You know, the proposals that go under the name flat tax these days, they could easily result in situations where A very wealthy person, actually pays less. A wealthy person who gets all of their income in the form of, you know, dividends and capital gains. Well, you know, that's not even taxed under these flat tax proposals.
And that's, you know, part of our tax code as well. I mean,
right.
The fact that, you know, somebody on Wall Street can make a bet, like one guy made $4 billion in a year and only paid 15% tax on it, when you got people sweating out in 100-degree heat building houses or putting up wires for telephone poles. And yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
They're paying more? What's, you know, where's the incentive then to work? And that's one of the things I said about the president. I'd hoped he'd be the guy who rewarded work again, because there seems to be almost a disincentive. I mean, we're rewarding people for sitting on their yachts, and we're punishing people for actually working.
It's true. And during the Bush years, we sort of increased these tax preferences for investment income, which means we increased the extent to which income from work is taxed more than income from wealth, which is really unfair.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Steve Wamoff, Legislative Director for Citizens for Tax Justice. We've got a link to their website at TheRickSmithShow.com. Just click on Steve's name. It'll take you right there. You know, I've been saying for some time now that I see 2013 as it comes up. If a Republican wins, I think we're going to see 1986 all over again. You're going to see that. And I have already heard a lot of Democrats jumping on board with the idea of, well, you know, we can lower the tax rates and we can close those loopholes, you know, just like we did back in 1986. And, you know, even Alan Greenspan said he was amazed at the speed at which all of those loopholes that they had closed in 86 returned. And I see this 2013 being kind of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts?
Right. Well, we definitely... You know, I mean, it's not that the Tax Reform Act of 1986, of course, did good things because it did close loopholes. We have a very different situation today because we have a fiscal crisis that is much greater than what we had in the 80s. We have a fiscal crisis because we just don't have the revenue we need to make the public investments that we need to provide the public services that working families depend on and all of that. I mean, that should be the top priority, is finding the revenue, raising the revenue, and raising it in a way that is fair, so that the big corporations like GE and your people like Warren Buffett are paying their fair share to help make that happen. I mean, that should be priority number one, I think.
So let me ask you, what would be the fair share for someone like Warren Buffett?
More than he's paying now. You know, we could have a system where we just end the tax breaks for investment income, so that when you have a millionaire living
off of his regular income.
Yeah, so we have a millionaire living off of his investment income, that would be taxed as if that was wages.
Oh, but you know the argument's going to be, what about that poor grandmother who's living on that, you know, that investment in XYZ utility company, and she needs every penny?
Well, you know, I can tell you right now that the tax break that we have now for capital gains income, around 75% of that goes to the richest 1%. The tax break that we have for stock dividends, the majority of it goes to the richest 5%. I think almost half of it goes to the richest 1%. So we are talking about, most of these tax breaks go to people who are very, very well off. And of course, yeah, you know, it may be that, you know, if I own a tiny bit of stock, I might get a stock dividend of, you know, $10 every now and then or something like that. But if I'm a regular working person, that's not going to be a significant part of my income at all. It's just not. And we looked at the stats and we found that, you know, a very, very tiny percentage of middle-income people rely on investment income for most of their income. I mean, that, we're talking about like less than 1%.
So instead of a flat tax, what's the ideal tax system to get us the income, the revenue that we need to be able to fund the programs that we want and to be able to not consistently go into debt? What kind of a tax code are we looking at? What would a top marginal rate be? Are you in favor of the Schakowsky bill? What?
Well, there are a lot of different ways to do it. I think that, you know, we do not need to reduce rates for the rich. We definitely do need to close the tax loopholes that exist currently for investment income. So definitely it would involve taxing all types of income in the same way. So if it's investment income or wages or whatever, it would be subject to the same rate. I think that's definitely part of it. And you know, this is how we would reform the personal income tax. Of course, we need some major reforms in the corporate income tax. We have companies like GE and Boeing and Honeywell that are completely avoiding paying any corporate taxes, and that's just ridiculous.
And we're actually paying them. Thank you for the job. Here's a couple $1 million. Because GE, over the last 10 years, we've actually given them more in rebates and incentives and tax handouts than they've paid.
Exactly. Exactly. So, there's a lot of room for reform. And I think, those would be the basic principles of it. There's a lot of other things too. I mean, for example, we need to end, there's a big tax break for, basically the U.S. doesn't, immediately tax the offshore profits of its corporations. And that just sort of encourages U.S. corporations to ship profits offshore, to ship jobs offshore, to sort of disguise their U.S. profits, to make them look like they're foreign profits. I mean, it causes all kinds of problems. And there's a lot of things like that we can fix in our tax system and raise the kind of revenue we need.
Yeah, and thanks to Panama, we've given them another opportunity to hide some more money offshore. And then we can talk about repatriation. In fact, I just heard Harold Ford, a guy I really cannot stand, another DLC Democrat he just came out and said, well, there's all this money offshore, $1.3 trillion. We could bring that back and create jobs. And I say, like we did back in 2004? That worked out real well for us. We lost a couple hundred thousand jobs, and you know what? They just divvied it up amongst themselves and bought stock back. How did that help me? It didn't.
And it's even worse because that actually tells the corporations, hey, why don't you ship even more money offshore and just wait a couple of years until Congress passes another quote-unquote tax holiday for your offshore profits. I mean, now these corporations know, hey, Congress is willing to do this every few years. We should send even more of our profits to offshore tax havens and just wait until the next tax holiday. What they like to call a one-time tax holiday. Let's just wait for the next one-time tax holiday.
Yeah, every couple of years where we can. I love the word too, repatriation. It sounds kind of patriotic.
Right.
Sounds like we're actually doing something for the country. When actually what we're doing is we're screwing the working people even more. Sad day here. Again, the Citizens for Tax Justice website, ctj.org. We've got a link at the ricksmithshow.com. Some good information there on Perry's flat tax and the fair tax. And basically you and me get screwed. Steve, I appreciate the time. I appreciate the work you guys do there.
No problem. Thank you.
At the center. Thanks so much. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
My name is Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job, they're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our Human Services campaign.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make it when you're happy.
I will oppose the Columbia Free Trade Agreement. I want Congress to pass a set of trade deals. Send a message to Congress to come to an agreement on trade deals.
They're selling make-believe, we don't buy.
that good. Cause in the real world, they're shutting Detroit down.
I gotta be honest, I'm still flipped off about those trade deals. There's virtually nothing in it for you and me. Nothing. There's job loss, a lot of that. But again, you know, big profits for the financial sector, and that's what they're meant to do. That's what these trade deals were meant to do. Break down borders for capital, break down borders for goods. So American companies maybe will start to invest in South Korea. I don't know how much investment you're going to see here. You know, and I think now the South Koreans got the best of both worlds. They can manufacture things at home. They can manufacture things in China, Vietnam, ship it here under their agreement. 35% domestic content for automobiles. 35%. The European Union got 55%. We should at least get their negotiators. Amazing stuff. So here it was. Michelle Bachmann was on the stump. She was out giving a speech, and someone asked her, said, you know, hey, I don't have health care. You know, my son doesn't have health care. So this woman's going, you know, look, my family, we don't have health care. I'm 63 years old, she said. Don't have health care. So at the stop in Iowa, Bachmann says, well, you know, that's just the way it is. But usually we have, you know, what we have are charitable organizations or hospitals who have enough left over so that they pick up the cost for the indigent who can't afford it. Now I'm sitting here and I'm thinking about it as I'm watching her say this. She's looking right at this woman who works for a living, 63 years old, can't afford health care, her employer doesn't provide it. And you've got Bachmann calling her indigent to her face. So she goes, you know, once Obamacare is gone, this is what we have to do. What? Go back to the system that didn't work, that didn't take care of people in the past? Really? And I think about this. I think of some 50 million people who had no health insurance in 2010. How many charitable hospitals are going to be out there taking care of people for free? You know, if you fall and you break your legs, you know, they may take care of you, make sure you're not going to die, but you're not getting long-term care. You got diabetes, you got cancer, kiss your sweet behind goodbye. And you wonder why all the people in New Hampshire bailed on her this past weekend. In fact, they came out and they put out a press release saying, hey, look, you know, the decision comes after soul searching by each of the individuals and countless hours of discussion. They don't say why, other than the fact that, you know, the national team was dishonest and actually cruel. And, you know, I look at Bachmann and I go, dishonest and cruel, that's a pretty good description. You know, the reality is I don't know that I could have worked for her. The press release said they were unprofessional, dishonest, and at times cruel. But more concerning was how abrasive, discourteous, and dismissive they were towards the citizens of New Hampshire. And I go, you know what? Yeah, I can see that. Can't you? I mean, on some level, can't you see that from them? I know I can.
Well, and I understand in New Hampshire, they want to know the answers. You're not going to get by with talking points out there. They tend to be more moderates, and they're going to sit down and they're going to listen to you on an intellectual level. And that's, we all know, is not her strong point.
No, she's for the low information voter because she's easy on the eye and she's crazy. And you know, those two things are a combination, kind of a hypnotic combination. I can see how you could be sucked into what she might be selling. But for how long? Unfortunately, these people woke up now. I guess they've dispersed. They're picking up other candidates that they're going to work for, and well, good for them. Maybe they'll pick up Herman Cain, who is on the Herman Cain train. And you know, you look at someone like Rick Santorum, and you know he's a gay basher. You know he's you know his position. He's never in fact, he said he'd die on the hill of same-sex marriage. Not ever going to let it happen. Well, Herman Cain, back in 2004, said, you know, the courts have failed the American people. Congress needs a constitutional amendment to protect the sacred institution of marriage. Well, just a couple of days ago, he said that he wouldn't seek a ban, a constitutional ban on same-sex marriage, but I am pro-traditional marriage, he said. Then, just a couple of days after that, he says, I think marriages should be protected by the federal level. So back to the idea of a constitutional ban on same-sex marriage. And me, I don't care. I mean, to me, the idea of marriage is between two people. I don't care. You know, you want to get married and spend your life with somebody, I don't care who it is. I would much rather them marrying each other than killing each other. It's just nuts. So, and speaking of Herman Cain, there's going to be a big Tea Party type debate. The Lincoln Douglas debates are back, I guess. The Herman Cain train and Newt Gingrich, which again, I can't understand why Cain would put himself in that position. Gingrich is nobody now. I mean, he's just hoping to hang on long enough to, you know, to make another payday, I think. But, you know, they're going to have the long drawn out debate. No more of this superficial and frustrating stuff. We're going to have an honest, true debate. And you know what? If I remember it, the Lincoln Douglas debates were several hours in length. I mean, and maybe that's the kind of thing we need to tie these two idiots up in. Just keep them talking to each other for a long time so that they're not out causing trouble for anybody else. And I don't understand why you would do it, but they're going right ahead with it. You know, earlier we talked about Steve Forbes and his support of Rick Perry. He also praised the Herman Cain train. You know why? Well, because Herman Cain's tax plan, you know, the 999 plan, cuts Social Security. So there's no more funding for Social Security, no more funding for Medicare. The 999 plan destroys that. So Steve Forbes, very happy with that. So there you go. During right before the beginning of the program, I was looking at a video that the Cain administrator, the Cain people put out. It is absolutely brilliant. And if you go to our Facebook page, Rick Smith or The Rick Smith Show, you can see the video that the Cain people put out. I don't know that it was a publicly displayed thing, because it was one of those things marked, you know, not for public or whatever it was. But Cain's chief of staff, a guy named Mark Block, is talking about how, you know, the Cain campaign is going to take back the country, and together we can elect Herman Cain and we're going to take America back. And then, you know, after this impassioned speech, they go to a shot of him taking a drag on a cigarette and blowing smoke into the camera. And I couldn't stop laughing. It was hysterical because, you know, to them that must be freedom, because nothing says freedom like being able to blow smoke in someone's face. Nothing says freedom like putting your rights on somebody else's. Nothing says freedom like smoking. I'm going, you know, really? That's what you've come up with? Seriously. Go to our Facebook page, The Rick Smith Show, or Rick Smith. It's on both of them. It's just a link because, you know, it wouldn't give us a little picture, but it is hysterical. And that's why I like Herman Cain. I'm actually thinking of changing my registration and becoming a Republican for the primary. Just to vote for Herman Cain. Because think about this. What if there were two black people running for the presidency of this country? The T-twits would explode. I think they would shoot themselves. They would be that upset. Because which black guy would they hate? I would like to see that. I would absolutely like to see it. So there you go. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Back after this. Stick around.
Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. Walmart is taking their rollback price-cutting model to employee health care plans. New part-time employees in the United States that work less than 24 hours a week will no longer be provided health care. The world's largest retailer also plans to start charging workers who use tobacco products more for coverage. The company is also slashing how much it puts into the employee health care expense accounts by 50%. These changes will take effect starting in January. a prayer service reflecting on a moral economy, has been published by Interfaith Worker Justice. Doug Cunningham has more on the story.
The Interfaith Worker Justice Occupy Prayer Service is designed to help people reflect on a moral economy within the context of their religious traditions. It's written for clergy and religious leaders. Interfaith Worker Justice says faith calls people to action to support justice and morality for workers. Joe Hopkins, an IWJ young adult missionary, was one of 175 people recently arrested in a nonviolent Occupy Chicago civil disobedience. Hopkins says people of faith can imagine a just world where families live together in their houses, the sick and elderly get care, and workers receive just payment. Interfaith Worker Justice Executive Director Kim Bobo says that the core issues driving the Occupy protests are the growing inequality in America and the lack of responsiveness on that and the jobs crisis from Congress. The Interfaith Worker Justice Occupy prayer services can be downloaded at their website, IWJ.org. From November 17th through the 20th, Interfaith Worker Justice, together with faith and labor communities nationwide, will hold actions aimed at an economic system oriented around just jobs.
The National Taxi Workers Alliance officially became a member of the AFL-CIO on October 20th. The taxi workers are the 57th organization to join the federation and the first chartered union in 5 years. The taxi workers also represent the changing face of organized labor in the United States. Due to standing in solidarity over the last decade, the taxi workers forced New York City to negotiate with the workers as a collective when dealing with taxi-related issues.
Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Radio of, for, and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show.
Rick 1-888-520-7425. Check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can download the podcast from our website. Or if you've got a smartphone, you can get the Stitcher app and take the program on the go with you. Last week we were talking about the Chinese and how they have spent a ton of money lobbying our Congress over this currency exchange rate oversight reform act put forth by none other than Jeff Sessions and Sherrod Brown. Now, there are some who say that we need to rein in how the Chinese are manipulating their currency, that the fact that it's 40% undervalued gives them a competitive edge where they're able to, you know, import products into the U.S. at, 40% cheaper than we can make them. And it's killing us. And if you look at the numbers, you look at our trade deficit, especially with the Chinese, that kind of bears out. Well, you know, the big money people, the Chinese, who have our money, because understand, when we buy all that cheap plastic crap from China, you know, when it says made in China, we give them dollars made in the U.S., and all those dollars go over to China, and they stockpile. There's only one place they can sell those. That's back here. And they're obviously not buying our goods because we have a massive trade deficit. So what do they do? Well, they buy us. They buy our companies. They buy our Congress. They buy lobbyists. And now you're seeing the think tank world getting in on the buying. Evidently, there is a National Committee on United States-China Relations. And their president, a guy named Stephen Orlins, he doesn't seem to like the Currency Exchange Rate Oversight Reform Act. In fact, he says it doesn't make any sense at all. He says, you know, because Obama, you know, he's in a lose-lose situation. If he vetoes it, the Republicans are going to attack him for being weak. If he signs it, our relationship with the Chinese go down the tubes. And the more I read these people, and there's a bunch of them cited in this article, oh, it's bad politics, oh, it's bad policy, oh, we're going to harm the relationship with the Chinese. And I think back to when I was a kid. And you look at our trade deals in a simple way. You've got a bully who is eating our lunch. Every day we walk to school, the bully kicks us and steals our lunch. If we don't fight back, what happens? Every day the bully beats us up and takes our lunch. The second you fight back, you smack him in the nose, maybe they stop. And I see, you know, and maybe this is a very simplistic worldview, but if a bully keeps doing this and you don't stand up to him, whose fault is it for you getting beat up? Me, it's your own fault. You should be fighting back. I don't mind losing a fight. I mind not being able to fight back, which is what's going on with our trade policies. And slowly we're starting to see people. Last week we talked about the Solar Association who, you know, brought together seven or eight companies saying, you know what, we're going to bring a trade case. We want to bring a trade case against the Chinese for dumping solar panels because it's killing our industry. But the Chinese are smart. They figured out how to play the American game, which is buy some of these soulless, no-good-for-nothing scumbag lobbyists who they will just sell their soul to the highest bidder. And this is what we're seeing. We're seeing a whole lot of this going on, and now you're seeing the messaging. And, you know, I came across another article. Oh, China has reached its peak. It's only down from here. Oh, we're going to be able to compete. We don't need any of that other stuff. You know, it's run its course. It's a whole lot of... Now, stop and think about this for a second. If this bill wasn't front and center, if it didn't have a chance of passing, do you think you'd see all this messaging going on? That, oh, it's bad for business, oh, it's bad for our relations, it's bad policy, oh, well, you know, China's done, they've made their, you know, they're as big as they're going to get, everything's fine. Do you think you'd be seeing all that? Because I don't think you would. They know they've had it good for a while, and they want to keep it that way. And we're the ones who are the suckers, Jake. You know, when we allow it to continue, and we continue to buy their stuff, what does it say about us?
Well, unfortunately, sometimes when even those who have the ability, such as the administration, and sometimes labor unions, step forward and they challenge China, especially the WTO regulations. You actually have American corporations who are saying, hey, don't do that. Don't rock the boat. We have it good here. Now, how bad, think about that. How bad is that? They violated WTO regulations. They are eating our lunch. They are taking hundreds of thousands and probably in long term millions of jobs from us.
2.4 million.
And you have so-called American corporations saying, don't challenge them, even though they're clearly in violation of WTO regulations. Don't challenge them because you'll make them mad, and we might not have a very good relationship with them if you do that. That's unconscionable, and therein encapsulates what's wrong in this country right now. You have corporations whose bottom line is not America. It's not the future of this country. The bottom line is profits, clear and simple.
Feeding that 1%, the not American, but global citizen. And, you know, the reality is, you know, you look at the trade deals. You had 83 voting for the South Korean Free Trade Agreement. 83 U.S. senators. You had 77 senators voting for Colombia, 77 voting for Panama. And I look at the Democratic Party with the same jaundiced eye that I look at the Republicans. And this, you remember Harold Ford? Does that name ring a bell?
Tennessee.
After he lost his Senate bid, you know where he went to work? He's now an exec at Bank of America. So he's an executive vice chairman to the company. He was on TV. He was on MSNBC. You're one of your favorite stations, by the way. And, you know, some of the things he had to say, just kind of mind-blowing. He started off by talking about the administration and right from the beginning, you know, how people were saying, well, you know, he's not business friendly. Well, listen to what he has to say.
posture has been really bad. Their policies have not been nearly as bad. If you think about the beginning of his administration, people thought that he would pass card check. And there was great angst, concern, and anxiety in the business community, particularly the retail community. He didn't do it. Right. Well, he didn't do it. The congressman tried, but he didn't do it, and it didn't get done. Cars, banks, financial institutions. He's been great. The EPA regulations, he's backed off on.
What the hell is he talking about? What congressman pushed for the Employee Free Choice Act? None of them. None of the Democrats pushed it, and neither did Obama. To me, that's a strike against him. And you listen to Ford, that's a good thing in his mind. And what's frustrating is he's a Democrat who you think would know better.
But the posture and the language and the rhetoric has been just too overheated. And to Mr. Welch's point, you can't incentivize the type of things that they incentivize in this bill. Two, you have huge balance sheets on the part of corporate America, meaning they're making money. You got to incentivize them, as the president has asked, to use that money to stimulate job creation. There's a way to do it if you have some certainty around regulations.
Could he have been any more like a right-winger there? They need certainty and regulation. Exactly which side are you on there, Harold? And thank goodness the people at Tennessee didn't put you in. I didn't like you back when you were running. But when you can't distinguish the difference between a Democrat and a Republican, and this is the one that just blows my mind.
And two, you got 1.2, maybe 1.3 trillion sitting overseas. Allow that money to come back.
With Occupy Wall Street, how does he take that?
He's the president, Andrew. He's the president.
We Democrats
can't criticize Republicans for catering to the Tea Party and not say to our Democratic Party, you've got to look beyond Occupy as well and do what's in the best for the country.
Yeah, you just got to look behind all those thousands of people in the streets, and we got to let corporate America repatriate all that money. Let it bring it all back. And, you know, basically, screw those people in the streets. I mean, that's a Democrat. That's a DLC Democrat, which is why I hate the DLC. Let's go to the phone lines. Jeez, oh, man. I got Andy on line one. How you doing tonight, Andy?
I'm fine, Rick. How about yourself?
Right now, I'm kind of pissed off. I'm listening to this guy who... You know, supposedly a Democrat, another example of why the Democratic Party ticks me off so much.
Good old Harold is not a Democrat. Good old Harold is a Wall Street Republican. I mean, it's a joke.
Bank of America executive.
Yeah, it's a joke. The guy has nothing in common with the working man. I heard you talking about the solar panel industry. I was reading an article this weekend in the Mercury News. You ever heard of a company called JA Solar?
Uh-huh.
They're the largest solar panel manufacturer in China. And they went from like over the past couple of years, from 3,000 employees up to 12,000 Chinese employees.
Yep.
And they're the ones that have the lowest cost panels. They're the ones that are really decimating our industry here in taking out Solyndra and SpectraWatt and Evergreen and so forth. You know, the problem is that Wall Street has just as much invested in JA Solar. Supposedly the biggest investors in JA Solar are American Wall Street bankers.
Yep. Well, they're hedging their bets. They're doing what gamblers do. You talk to anybody who plays the ponies, you hedge your bets. Make sure you got a little bit of all the action so that you can't lose.
They could care less about America or our labor here or the state of our economy. All they care about is where they can get the cheapest, lowest cost, exploited labor and where they can make the highest margins and the highest return on their money. And that happens to be China. So that's why they stick their money in a place like JA Solar, and they make sure we have these free trade agreements where they can easily ship those products across the ocean without any tariffs or any duties because they're going to make the high margins and the high returns. Here it is, Wall Street again. This is why Occupy Wall Street is so important. Wall Street is slitting our throats. By funding the companies in China and making high returns on them that are killing the working people in this country. That is what it's all about. It's this easy movement of capital across the globe for the cheapest, most exploitable labor to do in our labor here. Because
Absolutely.
We don't have any restrictions to getting those products in here. And that's all Wall Street cares about is where can I make the most damn money.
Yeah, I've got a friend who's a used car salesman. He said the only thing lower than a used car salesman is an MBA.
Yeah,
because you look at you know what they teach in these in these business schools.
Globalization, baby.
That's where the money's at.
Right, where you can make the most return. Patriotism, doing the right thing for the environment or for our economy means nothing so long as they get theirs. It's all that matters, Rick.
Yeah, it's what we've been talking about since the beginning of this program, and for the last 30 years, that's how it's been. Hooray for me and screw everybody else, and we're seeing that played out in the Tea Party. I know a lot of people want to try and draw comparisons between Occupy and the Tea Party. There isn't any. Tea Party, they knew what they wanted because that's what they were told.
That's the Koch brothers.
Well, and even beyond the Koch brothers, it's the 30 years of programming that went into it, the 30 years of Rush Limbaugh, the 30 years of all of the right-wing sputum that's come out telling people, oh, the government hates you and you should hate your government and we want limited government so it can be small and ineffective and all of that stuff.
Right, and government is the only thing the working man has to protect them from.
That's a sad reality, too.
Imports coming in. And that's why guys like Harold from Tennessee and these DLC Democrats are such a threat to working people. They're killing us.
Now, I couldn't agree more. And I mean, you look at these trade deals. They've killed us. And it's been Democrats who have been killing me all these years.
Rahm Emanuel is the father of NAFTA.
Yeah.
That's his baby.
But you go back to the Carter years. And as much as I like Jimmy Carter, he screwed me. He brought the airline deregulation and me personally, the trucking deregulation, which just decimated the industry. And now instead of having 85% of the LTL drivers in this country being unionized, you've got 5%. And you've got the wages that aren't supporting a family anymore. And that was Carter's doing. Now, it was partly energy problems, but it was also this idea of neoliberal free trade.
Absolutely, couldn't agree with you more. He brought in these economists. I think he brought in a guy from MIT who just died recently, who was the father of this airline deregulation. Gosh, we used to have such a great airline system. You could fly cheaply to every nook and cranny small town in this country without a problem. Now you can't do that at all. Can't get anywhere without flying into 50 misdirections before you get to your destination. And then it costs you a bundle of money to do that. Now, it used to be a system we had set up that everybody made profits, everybody made money. It was a big, happy, regulated system. And now you can't get anywhere, and it's way too expensive.
That's a hassle. But, you know, I'm hoping, I'm very hopeful with the occupation thing going on. I'm very hopeful that people are having these conversations face-to-face and that the discovery is being happened. That there is a better way, and there's got to be a better way forward where we all do well, not just a handful.
Right. We have to have some way to control this rapid movement of money across the globe that is used against us here by Wall Street. Somehow we've got to rein in that speculation that is killing us economically and killing our people and causing these high unemployment rates. Well, hey, thanks a lot, Chris.
Yeah, I appreciate it. The reality is, thanks, Andy. The reality is we got to erect borders again. If we've got borders for people, we should have borders for capital. If we've got borders for people, we should have borders for goods. And you know what? You allow things in and out, but you do it in a fashion that benefits your country. This idea that we're one big happy globe, not buying it. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this.
To the Rick Smith Show.
In response to the Supreme Court's freakish decision in 2010 to bestow political personhood on corporations, I got an email from a guy named Larry screaming that big money has plucked our eagle. Yes, it has. And the powers that be tell us that we shouldn't even try to undo this theft of our people's democratic authority, but instead should just try regulating corporate money, like maybe requiring them to disclose how much they're spending on campaigns. Now there's a bold stand for democracy. Give us campaign finance reporting regulations or give us death.
Come on, we're bigger than that. Here are just a few actions for real change that you can take, teaming up with others right where you live. Amend. Two major coalitions are organizing to overturn the court's corporate money edict by amending the Constitution. One is FreeSpeechForPeople.org, and the other is MoveToAmend.org. And both have action kits for raising the issue locally, petitions to be circulated, video and other good graphics to educate people, and a wealth of other organizing ideas. Localize. Pass your own local and state laws to stop the wholesale corporate purchase of our government. These include outlawing any corporate claim of personhood in your area, providing the alternative of public financing for your local and state elections, and banning campaign donations by corporations that try to get government contracts and subsidies. For information and help, check out publiccampaign.org and reclaimdemocracy.org. Confront. Yes, get in the face of power. Ask all candidates where they stand on corporate personhood, and demand that top executives of big corporations located in your area publicly agree not to spend corporate cash on your elections. This is Jim Hightower saying, remember, the Constitution plainly says we the people, not we the corporations.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
Organizing America 3 hours each night. The Rick Smith Show.
So I guess it has already happened. Mark it in the history book. The first Mexican truck to cross into the U.S. and have access to the American roadways company, Transportes Olympic, a Mexican company who they made the first trip from Nuevo León, Mexico, all the way to Garland, Texas, some 600-mile trip. According to the Federal Motor Safety Carrier Administration, the pilot program that they're saying, this is the part that bothers me. Well, there's a lot that bothers me. First, we shouldn't have an open border. We should not have an open border and putting our truck drivers in direct competition with someone who makes a mere fraction of what it is that the folks in this country make. You're basically going to undercut the industry, so we don't have to outsource it anymore. We can just bring people in to do the work cheaper, and which is what we're doing. But what really, beyond the fact that we're paying for all the electronic onboard recorders, beyond the fact that we're going to pay for all the drug testing and all the monitoring and all of the paperwork and all of the things going on, besides those few little minor points of contention, which I think are substantial, there's this idea that the 18-month pilot program that they've laid out, which I'm really not thrilled with, is going to go back to the Bush administration. And if you participated in that pilot program, will now count towards this pilot program. So that 18 months that they're talking about, according to Scott Spencer, or Todd Spencer, the guy from the Owner Operators Independent Drivers Association, the new program, you could be permanently authorized within 2 months. So no more 18 months under the gun, 2 months. And there's part of me that says, I'm really not comfortable with that. And another part that is really angry at this president. And again, you know, you look at the DLC Democrats, you look at the right-wing Democrats out there, and they're all in favor of it. And because we need to be more business-friendly. And what could be more business-friendly than cutting the throats of American workers? So, mark it in your history book. It happened, and it's going to be something we're going to have to get used to. B
because we have politicians who are weak. See, if it were me, and the Mexican government said we're gonna impose tariffs on 92 of your products worth billions of dollars, I would have in turn said, well, fine, be that as it may, we're gonna do it back to you, and we will strategically choose 92 products that you send into the country and impose tariffs as well. But we don't do that because we seem to be the only country in the world who has bought this open borders mentality. Oh, please dump all your crap in here. Why? Because we're the ones making it all over the world. It's our investor class who's profiting off of it. And, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, there's part of me that says there's got to be a way for the Tea Party people and the Occupy people to find common ground. There's got to be. Economically, there's got to be, but then there's this worldview problem. And when I look at stories like this one, I get angry and frustrated. And it seems to be always Democrats who are backdooring me. But I look at my options in the Republican Party, and you know they're going to backdoor you, so maybe I should join the Republican Party and just go, you know what, I know I enjoy the abuse. Because being a Democrat, sometimes that's what happens. I mean, you can go back through and look at these trade deals. You'd be at NAFTA, you know, right on down the line. The Colombian Free Trade Agreement, the South Korean, all of it had Democratic support. I'm hoping at some point the party becomes the party again and gives us a clear choice. And I think that only happens when you pull the money out of it. You know, you look at what's going on in the Occupy movement. These folks, these kids get it. These people understand. It's the money. It's the money that corrupts. It's the money that perverts our system. And making a corporation a person is not the answer. A corporation can be a person, like the cartoon said, when Rick Perry executes one in Texas. When they strap them down and stick a needle in their arm and they die, okay, you can be a person now. But that doesn't happen. So we're giving them all the powers that you and I have, only we don't have the ability to own Fox News. We don't have the ability to own a team of lawyers to get us out of anything. We're struggling. We foot the bill, and we suffer the consequences for all of their bad decisions. And in the end, who's left holding the bag, Jake? It's you, it's me, and it's every working stiff in this country, the 99%, those of us who don't have access to international markets and don't make our living sitting on a yacht.
I remember when CAFTA, now NAFTA was passed in 94, and along came CAFTA under Bush. I can remember some key votes, what the Bush administration did. They went to every one of those key votes, and some of them were Democrats, and they promised them whatever they wanted. Sometimes it's not just about money, it's about integrity. And I don't know the answer to that. But those Democrats, you know, damn them. You know, they voted, yeah, they got a few jobs in their district, but you know what? This country lost an awful lot of jobs since CAFTA was passed, and it'll lose a lot more. You got to have men of integrity. You certainly have to take money out of it, but you have to have men of integrity. I don't know all the answers. It's sad, sad, sad. But you're exactly right. Some very, very key votes sadly came from Democrats.
Now, I want to see them be the party that I know they are. And then I know they can be. And that's why we're here. We're going to push that. Because, look, you know what I'm seeing from the other side? And I wish there was a viable third option. I wish there was somebody who was willing to stand up and fight for the little guy. There just isn't. I mean, Wall Street isn't funding that.
I mean, is the answer doing what Bernie Sanders does, run as an independent? He's from a relatively small state, and he's loved in his state. Bigger states would be tough to do, but is that the answer? I don't know.
Well, the answer is voting for people who actually hold your values at heart.
Well, with the
and there's part of me that says, you know, these folks, they get in there with the best intentions and corrupted by the money.
Well, that's
you need to keep going. You need to keep getting this money. And it's the money, man. You know, our friend Phil Hare, when he would come on, he would say, every day, I got to sit down and make phone calls. Every day. I'm doing as much begging for money as I am legislating.
Mm-hmm.
There's a problem there. We've got to, you know, when you're running for Congress, it's a 2-year thing.
You know
nonstop.
What? If I had to draw up a blueprint, I would say, look at Phil Hare. ex-union president, in my mind, and I think you probably concur with it, he was really a union president that just happened to be a congressman at the time. And this Congress needs several hundred guys like him. They're not easy to find, but that's what we have to do. We have to know when he goes in Congress, he's not going to forget. That's another thing some of these people forget. And it is easy when you get in that lifestyle. You live almost, you're almost a movie star in a sense. You're on TV, you're on national TV, you're at the center of power. And I can imagine it's so easy to forget where you came from.
Wined and dined.
That's why you have to have guys like Phil Hare, who never forgot. God bless him. He never forgot where he came from.
Mr. Congressman, Mr. Senator, you got a title. You're somebody now. I can see the stimulation,
the allure,
stimulus in that. Sure.
And some of them reach the point where it's more important to get reelected than it is to stand on principle.
And it's, it's easy to come to, to compromise. Well, I'm doing this so I can stay in office and I can do the good work. But in the process, we're screwing ourselves. And these trade agreements, I don't know how long it's going to take me to get over these. And it'll probably take me not as long as the first person who loses his job over it. That's the sad part. Hopefully it's not you. I'm going to take a quick break. When we come back, Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Back after this. Stick around.
Our weapon solidarity, Jim Beals and Karen Silkwood, the list goes on and on. With every year that passes, 60,000 more gone. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
I'm David Thillman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. Chances are you may never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, inspecting an elevator, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org.
Most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. So much going on, so much to get to. Let's talk to Ellen Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Ellen, what's going on in D.C.?
Well, actually, there's a lot. The president is in Nevada, and he was in Nevada. I guess he's in California now. Basically gave his view. He said that he can't wait for Congress to act, and so he was directing one of his agencies, the agency that sort of runs Fannie and Freddie, supervises Fannie and Freddie, the Federal Housing Finance Agency, to try and end foreclosures and to enhance access to money so that people can end foreclosure. However, Lois Capps, a Democrat, and Representative Cardoza, another Democrat, said that this was just not enough, and it really wasn't going to do the trick. Elijah Cummings from the Black Caucus says this was only step one. So he was getting a lot of grief from the liberal end of the party on this today.
Well, and the Republican side of it as well. I mean, the reality is this should have been done 2 years ago. He should have taken the bull by the horns right away, knowing that that they were going to screw it up somehow. Had we done this, I think 2 years ago, it'd have been a greater help. And I think maybe, I mean, let me ask you: do you think this is him finally waking up to the reality that nothing in Congress is going to happen, and he's going to have to get out there and do it himself? I mean, he should have known that from the beginning.
I think he is waking up to that reality. I think he realizes, look, they're not about to pass a bill for cops. And for teachers, they sure as heck are not going to pass anything for real people who are in need, such as people whose mortgages are under the water.
And, the thing is, I was reading through some of the parts of it, and they were saying that you can't be behind on your mortgage. That was one of the things that I saw, and I'm going, well, the first advice every one of these banks give people who want to go through a modification is stop making your payments.
It's the craziest catch-22 in the world.
You know, and we should have done right from the very beginning what they did in the past that had worked so well, the Home Ownership Loan Corporation. We should have bought those mortgages back and had that.
Had we bought all those mortgages back, Rick Smith, and I'm sure, I know you agree with me 100% on this, instead of bailing out the banks,
yep,
we would have not only made people whole, but we would have made the banks whole.
That is my, that was my exact argument. The second this all happened, you make the people at the bottom whole, and it will make its way back up.
To me, right.
But if a dumb truck driver gets this, why don't the learned scholars who sit in the halls of our Congress get it?
Because they're so far away from the guy that drives the truck that they don't have a clue.
Oh, it's angering. Let's go on to something else. A new book coming out. The First Lady's got her book coming out. I'm sure this will be ridiculed and demonized by the right as some grand conspiracy to take over the minds of our children.
Well, you know what's interesting? I just actually opened a publishing company, and I just can't wait till you write your book so that we can publish it. But
I've already got the title. I've already got the title.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm surprised I've lived this long.
Aha! It's interesting because one of the books that's going to be hopefully making our blockbuster is a book on micronutrients. And what we're learning, of course, is that if you grow things in your garden, you grow things very close to locally grown, you're going to get many more nutrients.
Right.
So the First Lady has a book coming out called American Grown, How the White House Kitchen Garden Inspires Families, Schools, and Communities.
See, it's more of that economy stuff you people keep talking about. How dare
right.
growing food in your neighborhood. We need good old-fashioned genetically modified Monsanto seed food.
Exactly. None of that happening at the White House.
And good for her. You know, I gave her the ultimate credit when she dug up the garden. Hey, you know, do you think you'd see Laura Bush out there with a shovel? I don't think so.
Right. No, and she's done an amazing job. And I took a tour of the garden, and it's beautiful.
And, you know, it sends the right message. If only we could get the president to put those solar panels on the White House like he said he was going to do, that would send the right message as well.
That's right.
Lead by example.
Well, you know, I mean, who was it who had solar panels and then Reagan? I think Carter put solar panels and yep. Reagan took them off.
Yeah, in fact, they're still being used, those Carter solar panels, up in a college somewhere in New England. I think New Hampshire they're being used to this
really?
Day. Providing all the hot water for that college's cafeteria.
Well, I'm glad somebody's using them because, I mean, Reagan taking them off. Give me a break.
Well, but I see that symbol coming back here in 2013 if the Republicans take over. All of the clean energy advances we've made, all of the advances in solar and wind and geothermal, all that stuff's going to be pitched to the curb, and we're going back to good old-fashioned oil.
Right.
You know, where we can make
right, and then a little fracking just to make everybody even
yes,
happier.
Sir. A little frack water never hurt anybody, according to the drillers here in Pennsylvania. I guess the Lincoln-Douglas debates are coming back?
Well, they are coming back, and they're going to get Steve King of Iowa to be the MC of them. They're going to have a debate between Herman Cain and Newt Gingrich on money.
On money.
November 5th, outside of Houston.
Yeah, it makes no sense to me at all why Cain would put himself in that position with a nobody like Gingrich.
I have no idea.
It makes no sense on any level. I get it from Gingrich's
point of view. I
didn't understand
either. I mean, all right, if it was going to be Romney.
I don't even see why would anybody talk to Gingrich at this point? Nobody's talking about him. Why should anyone talk to him? But hey, you know, I love Herman Cain. I'm thinking about changing my voter registration to Republican just so I can vote for the Herman Cain train.
Well, you know, we always used to say we always bet Rush Limbaugh voted for Bill Clinton because it gave him all the food and fodder he needed.
Yeah, absolutely. It's amazing. So I'm looking at this other report that you've sent me. There's some human rights groups looking into Gaddafi's death. I talked about this with Victoria on Friday. I got to be honest, I'm really not all that concerned about Gaddafi, but I guess if you buy into the human rights argument, I guess even someone like him deserves some rights.
Well, I believe everybody deserves rights, and secondly, the criminal court in The Hague wanted him because you never can tell, and particularly in terms of what he may know about hidden wealth, all that kind of thing. But I think they're even more concerned about the 53 bodies that they found near where he was. of people who were just been executed, obviously without trial.
Yeah, I mean, this is what happens when you have chaos and you have these kind of things going on, and it's sad, it's angering, but here again, I'm not all that upset about Gaddafi. So what does
right.
that say about me, I guess?
But, I mean, what you don't want is a regime that just suddenly kills people, because then they're really no better than Gaddafi.
Well, like they say, you know, the new guy, same as the old guy. What was that Who song?
Right.
So there you hopefully you won't get fooled again. And lastly, I guess Wednesday, big public display with the debt commission.
That's right. And the question is whether the debt commission is really going to come out with any kind of real change and real recommendations. But this is their fourth public hearing, so that will be happening on Wednesday.
Yeah, I don't see how they really can. I mean, if I just don't see those Republicans. I see the Democrats caving. I see them giving a lot of leeway. I just don't see the Toomeys of the world, or Camp, or any of them giving really any ground.
I agree.
So here comes the trigger then. So we will see what that brings us. But anyway, it's, you know, we'll see what happens Wednesday, and hopefully we'll talk to you on Wednesday, and you can bring us what happened.
It'll be pretty interesting to see what happens at that public hearing.
Alan Ratner, thank you so much. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Alan Ratner, Talk Radio News Service. Now to find out what's going on across the street, what do you got for us tonight, Jay?
Yeah, thanks, Rick. We touched on Marcellus Shale. We talked about the governor's report that came out, Torzai's figures of 1,250. There was also a figure in there that proposed as many as 350 retail licenses. There was a real incentive at the time. There was a real push to get this done. It appears that there's some things that have happened since, and right now it's a toss up whether they're going to have it, whether in fact they're going to get it passed. If it's not done this year, it might get tougher to do next year, according to the article. Almost every state lawmaker is up for re-election in 2012, and some might be leery of tackling a historical controversial issue. Governor Corbett's report also notes new liquor taxes designed to ensure the state brings in the same revenues the state liquor stores produce now could leave many wine and spirits costing more for the constituents, so you have the cost. You have politics rearing its ugly head. And then you have people like Tara Madonna, who I respect and has pretty good finger on the temperature up on the Hill. And this is what he had to say, according to Terry Madonna. I don't see anything in the environment next year that will make it better. According to a professor from Muhlenberg College, He says this: there's only a finite amount of space and time for the legislature in terms of policies, and with a full policy agenda right now, state store privatization doesn't happen in the near future, it's probably going to drop way back in the pecking order. At the end of the day, as it's pushed further and further back, if it doesn't come up this year, there's some real key issues that this legislature is going to pass or is going to address, and it looks like privatization of state liquor stores could be pushed into the back. So stay tuned. At one time, it looked like a pretty good bet it was going to pass. Now, not so sure. Ron Buxton, he's been getting some real criticism for flipping on his vote. He has voted with the governor on the state coming in and taking over the city. Earlier this year, he vigorously opposed a Pecola plan that would have put the city under control of a three-member board of managers named by the governor and the Dauphin County commissioners, but this week he voted differently. This is a quote from Ron Buxton. It's time to bring some stability to the government of Harrisburg. That can only be achieved with the state's intervention in the financial condition of the city. Asked Friday about his switch, Buxton said there's a big difference between the legislature and the other city takeover bills. He also said there's a pressing need to break a political logjam that's been as bad as any he has seen. City Council and the mayor will still have the authority to run day-to-day operations in the city. According to Buxton, they'll be able to draw up the annual operating budget and raise the revenue needed to meet it. Buxton added he is confident that Governor Corbett, if it comes to it, will be careful to pick a receiver who will work hard to help Harrisburg recover outside of bankruptcy. In the end, Representative Buxton, although he has some legitimate objections to the state Act 47 plan, he realizes that if there's no action taken at this time or they're forced into outright bankruptcy, it would impose even more suffering on the city and its citizens. So finally, we have some resolution. It isn't over yet. The city council is going to court to see if they can, in fact, sue for bankruptcy. I doubt if they'll win that. Hopefully that whole scenario is going to come to a final solution. Some reports coming out of Scranton. Bob Casey has raised nearly $4 million at this point. That's a pretty good amount. Even the last time he ran, he raised 17, but we're a year out. There are a couple Republicans who have decided to run against him. A gentleman by the name of Mr. Tim Smith, who is a coal industry veteran from Armstrong County. He's raised about $124,000. He also has a secured loan of about $750,000, but none of the Republican candidates have really raised a lot of money. And according to what the polls are saying, he's in very, very good position right now, and I think Bob Casey, in fact, will be hard to beat. He's a good man. Rick?
All right. Let's take a quick break. We're right back after this to wrap things up. Stick around.
Covering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
On December 28, 1970, President Richard Nixon signed the Occupational Safety and Health Act into law. Thanks to strong lobbying efforts by union leaders over many years, this safety bill of rights established for the first time a comprehensive national policy to protect workers' health and safety. Effective April 28, 1971, employers were required to provide a workplace free of known hazards that caused or were likely to cause serious physical injury or death. Prior to the passage of OSHA, work-related injuries and deaths were extremely high. The 1920s saw reports of 20,000 workers killed on the job and more than 2.5 million injured per year. That number remained until the 1960s when work-related deaths dropped to 14,000 per year, but injuries increased by 20%. Today, thanks to OSHA, protections on-the-job injuries have fallen 40% and on-the-job deaths have been reduced by 60% pre-OSHA. OSHA is considered the first piece of legislation allowing the government to inspect and hold employers accountable for dangerous and physically harmful working conditions. OSHA has three branches, an enforcement branch, a research branch, and a review branch. Since its passage, OSHA has allowed for greater visibility and oversight in conditions on the job, prioritizing efforts to prevent accidents, control health hazards, and ensure workers go home as safe and as healthy as when they arrived on the job. While OSHA is a step in the right direction, there is still considerable work to be done, and only through the eyes and voices of working people with the help of their unions will tomorrow be a safer day. This Rick Smith Show Labor History Moment was made possible by a grant from the Labor Education Center at IUP. For more information, visit www.therichsmithshow.com.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
Running for the hills, you're running from Bank of America and Chase and all the other too-big-to-fail banks with your money on November the 5th to a credit union of your choice or a small local bank.
November 5th. Of course, the website, moveyourmoneyproject.org, if you need more information. Also, there is a close your account day on November 12th, where, you know, folks are to go in and close any account that they have other than your bank or checking account. So there you go, November 5th. Keep it on the mind. And like I said earlier, a good place to go, our friends over at PSECU. So a new, kind of a new study out, kind of a funny study. The study was sponsored by the maker of Trojan brand condoms. Columbia University evidently is the top school in the nation on the Trojan sexual health report card. And they rated a whole number of things, accessibility to sexual health resources and, you know, testing and hours and, you know, drop in, you know, all kind of stuff. The availability of contraceptives, all kinds of stuff. HIV testing on site, stuff like this. Lecture programs, education programs, tons of stuff. So Columbia, second year in a row, they're at the very top. And good for them. The other five, the people who round out the top five, University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, Princeton University, you would hope. If you're smart enough to get into Princeton, you'd be smart enough to put a hat on your Jimmy. And also Brown University and Oregon State University. Now, the bottom five kind of surprised me. Bottom five, little shocker there. Maybe Seton Hall. You think Seton Hall, maybe a little smarter. Chicago State University, the Air Force Academy, and then Brigham Young. I didn't know BYU. I didn't know they were allowed to have sex. So, they're the second from the last, and of course, DePaul University dead last. So maybe that's one of those things you might want to think about when you're looking at the college of your choice in the future. Maybe, you know, DePaul, people with the poorest protection habits. I don't know where to go with that. It just is what it is.
I believe that's a Catholic school.
It just is what it is. I mean, and I think you're right. I think it is. So, again, you know, the religious schools not doing so well. The ones that have a little thought on the brain, maybe a little bit anyway. A woman traveling to Dublin, Ireland. And now the article makes her out as a feminist blogger. Take that however you will. Evidently, she gets to Ireland. She opens up her suitcase to make sure that everything is where she left it. And there she found a handwritten note with the words, "Get your freak on, girl." Evidently, our female blogger was taking her vibrator with her. And someone with the TSA decided that they were going to comment on her choice and, you know, kind of left this message. Now, I got to be honest. I don't know that I'm comfortable with them doing any editorials. And that's kind of what she says. She goes, you know, on a certain level, it's kind of funny. Haha, nice job. But on another level, it's kind of, who are they to say? You know, she's like, you know, if I were one of those people who were easily humiliated, you know, maybe it would affect me. But she says, no, I don't have any shame when you're talking about sexuality. She's, you know, being a feminist, I guess. She doesn't get into that, nor would I. I mean, if you're going to put it in your suitcase, you got to know somebody might look at it, but not do the whole editorial thing. So when you go on trips, do you take your vibrator with you?
I don't have one.
No?
I don't have one, right?
Maybe you should get one. Take it on the plane with you. Maybe someone would care then. Here's an interesting story. A guy, 60-year-old guy, is going to court. He's going to sue a music competition for age discrimination. He was suing this nonprofit Young Concert Artists Group for not allowing artists, musicians, people like himself, 60 years old, into this competition. So he goes to court, and the judge, who I think you would want, I mean, if you're claiming age discrimination, maybe an 88-year-old judge might be a little sympathetic. Going, yeah, I've seen a little bit of that. But evidently this guy goes, I don't think so. So the guy who's suing, and this is one of those, you can't make this up. A 60-year-old guy suing for age discrimination now wants to discriminate on an age basis with the 88-year-old judge because he's claiming that the guy's unable to function as a judge. He says that the judge is slow-witted and unable to function. Judge Patterson could barely see unless he put his face almost on top of the document, Mr. Stoner wrote in the complaint. Judge Patterson should be removed from the bench, both because of his mental and physical limitations. With all due respect, he may have been very learned jurist in his day. And I'm going, hold on. I mean, you're suing for age discrimination, and here you are. Here you are discriminating against this poor judge, who I think could be, quite frankly, on your side. Interesting report from the folks at the State Department. The U.S. Special Inspector General for Iraqi Reconstruction reports that only 12% of the money that the State Department is allocating towards training police in Iraq are going to actually go for training police in Iraq. The rest of the money going towards advising, mentoring, and developing. Also for security needs, housing, lodging, you know, all that stuff. We're gonna make sure that the military contractors are very well taken care of. And what, you know, what this government watchdog group is saying, look, hey, this could be a bottomless pit. This could be a whole bunch of our tax dollars right down the drain. And, you know, there's part of me that goes, yeah, kind of exactly what we've been saying all along. And you look at the fact that since 2003, we have spent $8 billion supposedly to train, staff, and equip Iraqi police forces. Now, does anybody beside me remember that this wasn't going to cost us anything? How many people remember Paul Wolfowitz saying, well, you know, it's not going to cost us anything because they have the ability to fund their own reconstruction. They've got all this oil. And they'll be able to fund their reconstruction. And I was watching one of the press conferences recently, and the guy, you got to give the reporter credit. He actually asked a valid question. He said, will the Iraqis be required to begin to pay us back? Will we get some of the money back? And the guy who was speaking said, no, we're not going to ask for any of the money back because we're that generous. But you welfare mothers? No, nothing for you. You college kids? Sorry, screwed. You working people who want a jobs program? No. You want a job? Go to Iraq. There are a bunch of private contractors who will pay you pretty well.
And charge you 35 cents for a sandwich and a pickle.
35 cents?
$35.
That's a good
deal.
Sorry.
$35.
Oh, okay.
That amazed me. Absolutely amazed me. They're the only company in the country that can provide meals for the military.
And that would be
wash their clothes.
And that would be Halliburton.
A no-bid contract. I thought the reason for a no-bid contract was to expedite the process because they're the only ones or one of a handful that can do this. Apparently, someone believed in the Pentagon that Halliburton was the only one that can provide meals and wash the clothes of the military. That's hard to believe.
Well, they were the only ones who had a direct line to the White House.
And the vice president was a former CEO.
But the end of it, I don't think it was a no-bid contract. I think it was worse than that. I think it was one of those cost-plus contracts. Or whatever it costs, whatever cost you can make up, plus a percentage for profit. Because, of course, during the Bush administration, you got to give them credit. They're consistent. They had to make sure that the profits were there. Anyway, November 5th, mark it on your calendar. Bank transfer day. I know I don't have to because my money's already gone. Anyway, we'll see you tomorrow night.
Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at TheRickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like a tidal flood beneath the bitter sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous rain. Democracy's coming to the
It's the Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Go, join, become a member, and become thereby a part of the solution. here in Appalachia and beyond. Many thanks again to the folks who hosted me and others at the Social Justice Institute last week in Georgia. It is something I shall not soon, if ever,